play for us. Tip. Good morning. It is 9:12 on September 27th. I will call the City Council agenda meeting to order. If all of our council members would take their seats, I would appreciate. Mr. Goldstein, thank you. Mr. Kleiman, I think I'm counting you, Mr. Kleiman. There we go. Okay, I think we got it. Okay. Welcome, everybody. We will begin with an invocation, and then following, Ms. Grayson will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. It is High Holy Weeks, and I appreciate Rabbi Sean Zell of Tiferet Israel to be here this morning and offer the invocation. Rabbi Zell has been the spiritual leader there in District 11 since 2006. He's a native of Winnipeg, Canada. He holds a Master's of Jewish Education in addition to the rabbinical degree. Rabbi Zell is the author of The Right Word, A Guide in Fulfilling the Mitzvah of Visiting and Comforting a Mourner. Prior to assuming the pulpit at Tiferet, Rabbi Zell has served congregations in Sioux City, Iowa, and Clark, New Jersey. Shana Tova, Rabbi, and would you please come up and give us the invocation? All rise.
Heavenly Father, let us take note of the fact that 109 years ago today, the very first Model T left the assembly line in Detroit. Let us continue to marvel at the wheels of transportation. Let us cherish the wheels of government as it carefully guides us through the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi, and may you have a good Yom Kippur. With that, we'll take our open microphone speakers.
Good morning. Your morning speakers will be Michael Fritz, Curtis Corbins, and Sandra Crenshaw. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the podium. When your time is up, please stop and address any comments to Mayor Rollins only. If you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to your right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Michael Fritz.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the council. My name is Michael Fritz. I live in District 3 at 3726 Keys Crest Drive in Dallas. I appear before you today as the chair of our Keys Cliff Safety Code Organization and the Neighborhood Plus Revitalization Program. Our experience with the city code compliance began some 8 months ago when we were invited to submit shovel-ready projects as part of the program. Alleviating illegal dumping and meeting with code officials was paramount. In the ensuing time, our interaction with the various city departments that impinge upon code compliance has evolved or devolved into a series of meetings and briefings that are nominally related to the objectives of the Neighborhood Plus program. I would characterize our experience with the various City Hall entities that overlap each other around code as frustrating and opaque, as well as disheartening, discouraging, disappointing, and disjointed. An example of this would be the abatement of the three properties owned by AAA home builders in our neighborhood. Some of the issues are as follows. Failure to address the whole of Keys Cliff as promised, failure to bring the properties up to code, failure to remove substandard structures, failure to commit to the process, and an inadequate communication with the committee and other neighborhood organizations. Based on our eight-month experience with this difficult agenda, we have a suggestion to improve the process. No, we can't do that is an acceptable and appreciated answer. While it seems that neighborhood groups such as ours are always asking for more of the city's resources, we do realize that local government must balance the competing needs of a very large city with a multitude of programs, each with valued projects. We know this, and we know that sometimes, most of the time, officials must say no to our request. And I cannot stress this enough. A straightforward negative response is exactly the kind of transparency that the code compliance often lacks. However, the value of no is that it is the key to further communication. No is only the right answer if it begins with a discussion that leads to yes. For example, no, we cannot cut down all the dead trees on the property, but yes, we will remove the ones near the alleys and sidewalks that pose a possible danger to persons and property. This example makes another important point about the value of no. The conversation needs to occur before the project gets started, not after. You can help us and the neighbors adjust our expectations to the reality of the demands on city resources by being honest and forthright from the get-go. As I said, no must not be the end of the discussion. If you and your employees listen carefully and talk honestly and transparently to neighborhood groups like ours, you will hear the heartbeat of your citizens. Please assure that Southwest Code has a comprehensive and rapid response plan to clean up all of Keys Cliff.
Thank you, Mr. Fritz.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mayor. Michael, I want to thank you for coming down and express your concerns. I know this past weekend there was a cold crawl that was in the neighborhood. I heard things went really well. About 10 of eight of your neighbors came out. And I want to have Krista come up and kind of talk about what they've been doing and some limitations. So, Chris, if you'll come up.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chris Zwecker, Director of Code Compliance.
Chris, kind of talk about what your team went out and did, how many people came out and the work that was done, and then also some of the limitations, because I know there's some concerns with some issues in terms of private property. So kind of talk about that so the mayor and council understand, and as well as those who listen understand what the city can do and can't do according to code.
Sure, Mr. Thomas. So, as Mr. Fritz indicated, there were a number of concerns with some particular properties within the Keys Cliff neighborhood, which is one of the Neighborhood Plus program areas. We've issued notice to the property owners. They failed to clean up those properties. So nuisance abatement, which is one of the divisions within code compliance, took it on as their responsibility to clean those properties. There were actually five properties in total that we served notice to and cleaned up. It was a massive project, bigger than what we are accustomed to doing. As you know, code compliance deals with private property, not public property such as parks and streetways. So we're not used to doing massive projects like this. There are two large tracts of land, one approximately 10 acres, one probably 3 acres of natural raw land. It's not developed. On part of one of them, there used to be an apartment complex, but that was torn down years ago. So it's very rugged terrain. We did go out and mow the property. We removed a significant amount of illegal dumped materials. In total, we spent over 5 days with our crews specifically only on those five properties. By comparison, we typically do at least 100 properties per day. So we delayed a significant amount of work to expend our resources on these properties. In total, we pulled out 982 cubic yards of debris, which is about 65 truckloads. We had the entire nuisance abatement work staff out there multiple days. That's about 50 staff resources that were dedicated to this. We had about 50 pieces of equipment. It was a massive undertaking, and I'm very proud of the work that my division did. I think they did an outstanding job. We did everything that we could. There were some references to dead trees on the property that we cannot remove. There's no ordinance against having a dead tree that is standing on your property, so we cannot take abatement activities against that. In terms of the alleys, we did clean back up to 2 feet off of the alley. One of the complaints we were getting from the neighbors were that the limbs were hitting their vehicles when they pulled into the alley. Obviously, that is a violation. We trimmed that back 2 feet from the right-of-way to accomplish that.
Thank you, Chris. You can come say.
Let me ask just one question.
Oh, go ahead.
Is that absent landlord, or are these properties people own and live on the properties themselves?
No, sir. There are no structures on the properties. They are owned by a developer, and they are planning through sustainable development construction. They've made multiple attempts at getting permits.
Okay, thank you.
Colleagues, this is one of the reasons I was such a strong advocate when we talked about in the budget having a code office of each of the neighborhood plus target areas, because we have a lot of areas that we personally chose that need a lot of attention, and having a code officer specifically for that neighborhood plus area.
I'm going to cut you off. We're advocating versus questioning, but thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Next speaker.
Next speaker, Curtis Corbin.
Good morning to you, Mayor, City Manager, and all the council members. My name is Curtis Corbin. I'm the President and CEO of Southern Dallas Link. I'm here today to talk a little bit about Grow South and a program that we started with transporting men and women of the southern sector to jobs that they normally could not get to without transportation. About a year ago, while meeting with Edna Pemberton in her office, she shared that the men and women of South Dallas had issues with getting good-paying, decent jobs because they did not have transportation. She said, this is the problem, you solve it. So we began to group together a couple of people, began meeting people at the DART train stations throughout the Metroplex, taking them to jobs as far out as Ennis, McKinney, Plano, where the good-paying jobs are. And we can say as of today, a year later, we've been able to get over 400 people jobs that would not have had those jobs without transportation. We are very proud of our work. Ms. Pemberton is one of our leaders. I want to thank Councilman Casey Thomas. I want to thank Councilman Tanell Atkins. I want to thank Renee Hammonds. I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited about what's going on. I want to thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway. I want to thank you, Councilman Adam McGoo. I want to thank my pastor, Brian Carter. I want to thank Candace Bradshaw, Pastor Connor. I want to thank Wendy Burton. I want to thank Channel 8, who had an integral part in riding along with us and seeing the work that we're doing. It's amazing how people have hope now, because they now can get to work. They can get to these good-paying jobs. But it has to do with Grow South, Mayor. We want to thank you for Grow South, and they believe that the city of Dallas cares about them, that someone will get them to work as far away as Plano and Fort Worth and Grapevine. And I can't say enough about the police department, because we have police officers out here now. Instead of taking people to jail, they're bringing them to us to give them jobs. And that makes a major difference, that people are beginning to believe in the police department again. Again, because they know they're not out there just to arrest them, but they're out there to give them jobs and everything. So I just want to thank the council for their support. Thank you, City Manager, for your support. And I just ask that you all continue to stand behind us as we try to stamp out poverty. And in order to do that, people have to have good-paying jobs. And so it gets exciting to get up every morning at 4:30 to take these people to work and just to see the excitement on their face when they get good-paying checks. Thank you.
Thank you for your entrepreneurism. Mr. Thomas.
Mayor, I've got to say something about this. This has been tremendous. I don't know if you remember, right after we had the big announcement over at Redbird Mall, we had the session, and he was one of the ones who talked about transportation. He talked about one of the things we need to do is help them increase capacity. So I met someone with United Way, one of the funders, and they met with him, and they provided that funding so they could increase their capacity. Okay. And this is how we address that issue on poverty. We get people with transportation. Councilmember Magoo, I know this is something you're excited about. Having a third party that's out there providing transportation, getting people to work who are coming from south out to north so we can bring the jobs south. And so I want to commend him and thank you, Mayor, for your effort.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Try to not to do too much advocating.
I'm not going to advocate. I'm just going to tell you the truth. Curtis, thanks for coming down, Ms. Pemberton. And when I was on my two-year vacation, I helped support and finances Deborah to make sure this happened in Southern Dallas. But I don't think that you're coming down. You're doing great. And we need to get behind transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. And I'll just ask one question so I can stay in line. What else can we do? What else can we do, Mr. Thomas, Mr. Atkins, Ms. Pemberton, Curtis? You all let us know, and I'm asking, what else can we do to make it better?
Thank you. Well put. Next speaker.
Sandra Crenshaw. You may begin.
It is duly noted that the best way to keep the Negro, placeholder name for African American, disinformed is to hide knowledge in a book, in a library, or a museum. General Lee awaits a new home in a museum for the privileged to study and celebrate, out of harm from Negro theatrics and out of public view of the poor and ignorant children who cannot read or write the narratives. Children that are filled with self-hate, little pride, no understanding of civic duty or patriotism to this country, and as we have seen, vulnerable to fool's errands. They will never know that the unnamed companion on that statue was Lee's enslaved body servant, Reverend William Mack Lee. Once freed by Lee, he wrote a book to inspire other freedmen to get an education. Good Street Baptist Church, church home of Senator Royce West, sits on the former plantation of William Brown Miller, known as one of Dallas' most ardent Confederates, and he was pardoned by the President Johnson. The graves of his freedmen are nearby. The matriarchs of Senator West's family breastfed and raised the children of the Confederates, and they considered them part of their family. Miller gave Freedman Hines a business and harbored at the Joppe Ferry, and gave the West family new beginnings and safe harbor in Joppa from the Ku Klux Klan. Lee's headed for a $2 billion industry in this city, and Black Lives Matters were once again used to fight this fight that was totally, totally unnecessary, Mayor. And I am very, very saddened. This is a sad day. Once again, to use the African Americans, the Negroes, when that could have easily been done without all of the theatrics. I thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes your morning speakers. We'll now move to the voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the September 13, 2017 City Council meeting.
The motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to the consent agenda. Your consent agenda consisted of agenda items 2 through 41. There were no addendum consent agenda items. Agenda item 4 was pulled by council members Kingston and Griggs. Agenda item 8 was just corrected on the addendum. Agenda items 33, 34, and 35 were pulled by council member Griggs. Agenda item 39 was deferred prior to the meeting by Mayor Pro Tem Carraway. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of agenda items 2, 3, 5 through 32, 36 through 38, 40 and 41.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 4, authorize 1, a 5-year service contract with 2 1-year renewal options for the printing, insertion, mailing, and document composition services of invoices for Dallas Water Utilities and Court and Detention Services, FormMaker Software, Inc., DBA Kubra, in the amount of $10,084,076, most advantageous, proposer 7, and 2, supplemental agreement number 2, to increase the master agreement with Pitney Bowes, Inc., for meter lease, maintenance, and postage in the amount of $450,000, total not to exceed $10,534,076. This item was pulled by council members Kingston and Griggs.
Thank you. I entertain a motion, Ms. Gates.
Move for approval.
Motion second. Discussion, Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. While I understand the need for printing and a long-term contract, I just want to make sure that we're doing everything we can as a city to get people to accept their bills online. I've had my water bill online 3 or 4 years now at least, and that obviously saves printed paper. So we'd just want to make sure that we have a very aggressive program to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you. How many accounts are still getting paper bills?
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, good morning. For the record, Majid Al-Ghafri, Assistant City Manager. We have 300,000 accounts, 250,000 of them pay the bill, receive bills, and 50,000 of them receive online statements.
What do we have a plan for increasing that online option? We need to keep paper available for people who don't have access to the internet or who don't want it. But this seems like a very low adoption rate.
Councilman, the bill itself alludes to using the online for automatic payments and for receiving the bills online as well. We've seen an increase of about 10% over the past few years, a consistent increase. Understanding it's not a lot, but it's still moving that needle in that right direction.
Is there a way to incentivize it?
I'll defer that to Mike Frosch on the procurement, or Terry.
Good morning. I'm Terry Lowry, and I'm Director of Dallas Water Utilities. To incentivize them to pay online?
Yes.
Currently, we charge the cost of service to provide the service, so they're only paying for the cost of that service.
But those of us who pay online are paying $2 million a year to provide paper bills to the people who don't pay online, correct?
Currently, that is included in the total cost for the utility, yes, sir.
It seems like this is a pretty obvious area for cost savings. So I would have hoped that this would have more of a strategic plan for reducing this. I assume that over time we'll eventually go away from paper entirely, but
I agree with you, Councilmember Kingston. We do want to encourage more people to go towards online payments. It's been increasing about 10% a year since 2013 when we started a Go Paperless, Go Green program that we push out with information to our public. And I agree that a more aggressive program would be a good idea.
Could you maybe bring us some ideas for that?
Yes, sir. We'd be happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. We had the issue of these bills come up previously when I was on the council, and there were three issues at that time. One, you've already addressed the adoption rate of paperless and where that is. The second issue was a frequent complaint, anyway, that I heard a few years ago, was about consolidated billing. People with several water meters at different properties wanting to get a consolidated single bill sent to a single address. Has there been any progress on that, or does that continue to be a complaint?
That is something we continue to work on. We have worked with some of our larger customers like DISD to work with them so that they have the information available for all of their bills online. So we are reaching out to our larger customers and people that have issues with that to help them.
Okay. That would be a second area so far that I would like to see some more progress in, because we did have this issue come up last time when we took a look at the cost of the whole billing structure. So this is a reoccurring issue that certainly with a city the size of Dallas and our sophistication, we should be able to help our customers by sending out single consolidated billing statements for multiple accounts. So I'd like a memo or something about when we will anticipate making some progress in that, since this was an issue last time we authorized
this
same expenditure, and on the increasing the adoption rate, which is another issue. Let's come back. The third issue that we also had last time this came up was the cost per bill. Under this contract, what will be the cost per bill that we're sending out?
The cost per individual bill, I don't know. Overall, annually for Dallas Water Utilities, there is a reduction in cost of $400,000 from $2.1 million a year to $1.73 million a year. There's additional savings for courts of $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested in the memo on that, too, just to see our cost per bill and see if our savings are a result of solely getting more people to increase the adoption rate of online paying, or if some of it is a result of getting a better contract this time, since last time the cost was pretty outrageous that we were spending per bill getting it out. So anyway, look forward to some answers on those three concerns. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And you have to stay there. You know, when we talk about going just online and going paperless, I don't agree with that. That's one thing. Everybody is not computer savvy as relate to it. I think we run a risk at our seniors not being able to be on computers to get their water bills. I think that one day, even myself, as I continue to get a little older, I may not keep myself abreast of how to even operate a computer. So that means that I run a chance of missing my water bill and having my water cut off, and which creates yet another problem for us. I do believe that we should continue an aggressive mood at trying to get as many people online as possible. But to just succinctly say now that's where we're going, that's not where we're going. The water bill is important for more than just receiving the bill. We put stuffers in the water bills. Do we not put stuffers in the water bills?
Yes, sir.
Do we not put other notices in the water bill? Do we not put other information into the envelope into the water bills?
Yes, sir. There is a difference.
That has nothing to do with water. That has things to do with other ideas and things that we want the public to be aware of. So, yes, I do believe we should aggressively continue to move forward, not as fast as this has to happen right now. And let's just cut this out, because let's consider all the other things that we're cutting out. The water bill stuffers, the reminders, the notices, the flyers, the emergency notices, all of the different things that you all do stuff a lot in the water bills, don't you?
Yes.
All right. And it's not just the bill.
That's correct. We provide additional information from other departments, from the city. Yes, sir, we do.
So that would go away if we were just online. The stuffers would go away.
The stuffers being received in the mail would, yes.
Would go away. Okay. So those are things that I want us to be cognizant of, that it's not just saving the money on one end. It's what effect it'll have on the back end, the effect it'll have on seniors, the effect it'll have on people without computers, the fact that we know if we sent your water bill to your house and you didn't pay your bill, we know we sent the bill. While we won't be able to always know that we sent the email, we can say we sent it, but we won't know if they received it.
Yes, sir.
Okay? So that's kind of my position, and my suggestion is that as you do what has been requested, take those thoughts under consideration, so when it does come back, that you will have those thoughts incorporated as well, and not just we're going to just shut this off and try to move toward online. We got a while before that happens, that we will be able to say succinctly that everything that we do is paperless. It will not be paperless. It will never be all paperless. But we should move in that direction. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Yes, thank you. We sent out 300,000. We have 300,000 customers. Is that correct?
That we bill every month, yes, sir.
And out of 300,000, 50,000 is online?
Yes, sir.
And
this year it's 57,000, so it's approximately 57,000.
So how many years have we been keeping track? How many is online and how many is deleting?
We initiated a program to go paperless, go green in 2013, so we've been tracking our progress since 2013, and the number of customers utilizing online bill payment has increased about 10% a year.
About 5,000. Per yes. year. Well, I don't pay online because there's one reason, because every time I pay online, I got a problem. I get double billed or triple billed. So I bring my bill up here. And that's been a problem for the last 10 to 15 years. So I know we got a glitch in online payment. And I guess that'd be something for the city managers to find out those glitches that we have, the people who do pay online, you know. And how many complaints do we get that people who pay online that for some reason they didn't get the payment, for some reason that the bill was not correct? Do you keep an account of that information?
Not by the way their bill is delivered to them, but we do keep information on the types of issues that get raised. Yes, sir.
Is there a way that I can get from you that the complaints that people who pay online, how many who do complain by paying online or get missed bill?
I will see if I can find any data that matches that description.
Okay. When you put stuffers in the bill, is there any outside customers that we use their information to put in the bill that we charge?
We use mostly it's city departments, other city departments, or the mayor council office. Sometimes a charitable organization working through a city department will have an insert, but there's a schedule that's laid out for the year as to what inserts go into the bill.
My question is, do we charge anyone outside to put stuffers in our mail that we mail to the customer?
We charge, when we have an insert for a different department, we charge the cost of the printing and billing.
Well, you said departments. I'm saying outside the department, outside the city that pay us.
Anyone that uses one of those would pay the cost of the bill insert itself and the printing.
Could you give me an information how much is that amount is? You know, we talk about advertising. And I know, Mr. Carraway, you're talking about advertising. And to put something in there, that could be a way to generate more revenue as a mean to offset the people who's online versus who do get their bill by mail. My concern is I do understand that we need to have more people online. I think it's an education process. I think when you do that, your credit card is at risk. Also, that we need to make sure that we do make sure it's 99% safe if we do decide to go all online. But one thing that we need to make sure and keep a track of how many customers is complaining about their bill when they pay online, and that's the information I would like to see. Thank you.
Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. So simple math shows us about $3.50 an invoice to mail these out.
I have not done the simple math.
Yeah,
I apologize for that.
I mean, $10 million, 250,000
over
customers.
5 years. So it's the current contract will be about 1.73 per year.
Per year.
Yes,
okay.
For Dallas Water Utilities.
Okay, so then it's costing us about 70 cents to a dollar per mailing to do that.
There's about 3 million.
So what about an incentive just like if you pay online, like a $1 reduction in the cost of your bill? I mean, something simple like that. Just encourage people to pay online.
It is certainly something we could look at.
Could we please? Okay. And then just colleagues, I mean, if you're really concerned about the cost of the water bill, we shouldn't be raising water rates, which we did last week. So the big savings we could have to our customers, just not keep raising the rates on them. Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Two opposed. Motion is carried.
Agenda item 33 will be held until later in the meeting, so we'll move to agenda item 34. Item 34, authorized acquisition from Harold J. Babber of approximately 5,379,000 square feet of land located in Van Zandt County for the Lake Tawakoni 144-inch transmission pipeline project, not to exceed $29,700. This item was pulled by Councilmember Griggs.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman.
Motion to approve.
Motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. Griggs opposed. Motion is carried.
Agenda item 35. Authorized acquisition from Maria Gloria De Leon of approximately 5,772,000 square feet of land improved with a single-family dwelling located near the intersection of McGowan and Childers Streets for the Cadillac Heights Phase 2 project, not to exceed $43,700. This item was pulled by Councilmember Griggs.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Motion to approve.
Motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Opposed. Mr. Griggs? Opposed. Motion is carried.
We will now move to your items for individual consideration. Item 42, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have full council individual and officer appointments for the 2017-19 term. The item will be separated into two votes to allow the nominee for the officer position to be duly appointed to the board first. Nominees for full council appointments to the Ethics Advisory Commission, B. Celestino Carrion is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. To the Landmark Commission alternate members, John P. Allender is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Mr. Allender meets the historical preservation special qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 3 Board, Oak Cliff Gateway, James K. Sharp is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs. To the Reinvestment Zone 5 Board, City Center, and the Reinvestment Zone 11 Board, Downtown Connection, Larry M. James and Evan L. Beatty are being nominated by Councilmember Kingston. Mr. James meets the Agent of Property Owner and District special qualification, and Mr. Beatty meets the Employee Agent of Property Owner and District special qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 6 Board, Farmers Market, Ivy Sweeney is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 8 Board, Design District, Ryan Garcia is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. To the Reinvestment Zone 18 Board, Maple Mockingbird, Reyna Gonzalez is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Nominees for individual appointments. To the Animal Advisory Commission, Charlotte New is being nominated by Councilmember Gates. Ms. New meets the general public special qualification. To the Board of Adjustment, Peter A. Schulte is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Albert Gonzalez is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. Mr. Gonzalez meets the Volunteer Experience in the Arts special qualification. To the Community Development Commission, Elizabeth Caudill is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. Ken Montgomery is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. John S. Hazelton is being nominated by Councilmember Gates. And Antonia Hubert is being nominated by Mayor Rawlings. To the Citizen Homeless Commission, Linda Garner is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Ms. Garner meets the general public special qualification. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Tony Shadid is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan, and Myrtle E. Lavalas is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, David J. Labreck is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. To the Landmark Commission, Courtney M. Spellacy is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. Ms. Spellacy meets the historic preservation special qualification. Krista De La Harp is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. Ms. De La Harp also meets the historic preservation special qualification. To the Municipal Library Board, Sarah M. Losinger is being nominated by Councilmember Gates. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Donna Slater is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. And Johnny Goins is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. To the Park and Recreation Board, Jesus A. Moreno is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Ernest Slaughter is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. And Rob P. Stewart is being nominated by Councilmember McGue. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Marsha B. Lefkoff is being nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Carl Raines is being nominated by Councilmember Callahan. Mr. Raines meets the 55-plus years of age special qualification. To the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, Tiffany M. Camucci is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. Ms. Camucci meets the active and South Dallas Fair Park community special qualifications. To the Youth Commission, Mary E. Orsak is being nominated by Councilmember Gates, and Trey J. Brown is being nominated by Councilmember Kingston.
A motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Your officer appointments. Sarah M. Losinger is being nominated chair of the Municipal Library Board by Mayor Rawlings. And Christine Schwope is being nominated chair of the Community Development Commission by Mayor Rawlings.
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 43, authorize a development agreement with NADG, SHOP, Lake Ridge LP, and or its affiliates in an amount not to exceed $4,500,630 on property currently located at 9634 and 9660 Audelia Road in Tax Increment Financing Reinvestment Zone number 14, Skillman Corridor, TIF District.
Excuse me, Mr. Atkins.
Second.
Motion is second. Discussion. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 44. An ordinance amending Chapter 34, Personnel Rules of the Dallas City Code by amending Sections 34-1, 34-22, 34-23, 34-30, and 34-38 to 1, clarify the policy, 2, amend sick leave policies, 3, amend vacation leave policies, 4, amend military leave consistent with state law, and 5, amend grievance and appeal procedures.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
Move for approval.
Motion is second. Thank you. We got a second, didn't we? Okay, thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? One no. Ms. Grayson. Motion is carried.
Agenda item 45. Authorize 1, an interjurisdictional Hurricane Harvey Municipal Aid Agreement by and between the City of Houston, Texas, and the City of Dallas, Texas, to provide mutual aid in the form of personnel, supplies, and equipment during the Hurricane Harvey disaster, as well as during cleanup periods. And 2, the City Manager to execute agreements for services associated with lodging and incidentals resulting from participation under the mutual aid agreement, with payment to vendors based only on the amount of services directed to be performed by the city to be reimbursed subject to the terms of the mutual aid agreement.
Thank you. Before I entertain a motion, I just want to give you the most recent news on this. It's good news. The city of Houston called our city yesterday and told us that the private sector was stepping up to a level down there that they didn't need these trucks as soon as we thought they would. I talked to Mayor Turner twice yesterday, and Mayor Turner was unbelievably effusive in his appreciation of the city of Dallas for what we've been doing for those victims and for those homes. He asked us to go ahead, if it was your will, to pass this in case in the next couple of weeks we might need to do it. But right now we don't, and we will not be interrupting the services to our citizens the way we talked about earlier. So I think it's good news on all fronts, but I think it's appropriate to go ahead and put this in place if in the next couple of weeks or, you know, 30 days from now something happens and they need the help. So with that, I will entertain a motion to approve.
Mayor, so move.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Discussion. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm supportive of this, but if it does, I mean, and thank you for the update. I just want to make sure if we do have interruption to our customers that we communicate that and make sure that everybody understands. I think our community would be extremely supportive and want to help our friends in Houston, but I just want to make sure that they, you know, because people get high penalties for and no, you know, for putting bulk trash out, you know, we need to make sure we communicate that.
Thank you, Ms. Gates. Mr. Atkins.
Mayor, I guess this would be a question TC. So we have put out on notice that
Original TC finish.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
He asked me a question.
We have put the original notice that we would not be able to pick up buck trash this coming week. So, therefore, how are we going to inform the citizen that they can put a buck trash out to get it picked up? And I had a meeting last night to explain to that. So, what do we do now? And if something happened in 2 weeks, what do we do? So, right now, I think it would be a communication problem. What's going on?
I would consider it a problem. We're going to communicate out to those that might have been impacted by the change in the schedule. We'll do it through social media as well as direct contact in some manner or form with the customers. I don't think we committed that we were going to do it. It was a pending item.
I believe that we did. I believe that we did send out information. I asked that, and I did talk to Colton, and we did send information out to the resident that this week we would not have buck trash, and next week we would have, next month we have buck trash. It was rotation. And as of last night in my community meeting, I talked to Cole. They did inform the citizen in District 8 that do not put out buck trash.
Again, since the decision's been made today, we will recommunicate that and update them. And similar to Ms. Gates' concern about going forward and any impacts for putting out the wrong trash and whatever, I thought we had communicated, at least internally, that we would not be instituting those types of penalties for those types of mistakes. But we'll recommunicate, send out a press release today, and do all we can to make sure people know more broadly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carroway.
Mr. City Manager, can you do a reverse telephone call to those? Is that something that we could do?
If that service is available and we have their contact information, we will do everything we can to communicate.
Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you.
Agenda item 46 is an ordinance abandoning a portion of Bird Street to Criswell Center for Biblical Studies, Inc., the abutting owner, containing approximately 17,700 square feet of land located near the intersection of Haskell Avenue and Bird Street, and authorizing the quitclaim and providing for the dedication of approximately 17,700 square feet of land needed for a wastewater easement. Mr. Mayor, this item has 9 speakers that have registered to speak on the item. The speakers are as follows: Patricia Latola, Ann Lou Wright, Randy Lou Wright, Philip Canati, Barry Creamer, David Sidney, Dallas Cothram, Kevin Steele, and Josiah Presley. If I called your name, will you please come forward? Individuals, be allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer at the podium. Your first speaker is Patricia Latola. Ms. Latola, you may begin.
Good morning. My name is Patricia Latola, and I represent Randy Wright here in connection with Bird Street. Bird Street is essential to his business. Approximately 2 decades ago, Mr. Wright purchased the property that abuts the abandonment. He runs 2 businesses there, a small handbag shop and an apartment complex. Almost immediately, Criswell approached him about buying the land, but they only wanted to pay the raw value of the land, or they said, better yet, can you just donate it to us? Much later, they said, would you please consider abandoning First Street? And he said, well, what about the parking? And he never heard from them again. Faced with Randy's refusal to give away his property, his business, Criswell embarked on a plan to circumvent the city ordinance that requires obtaining the consent of all abutting property owners. He owns the land that is in blue, and across there you see the red line. What they did was they set the boundary for the abandonment of Bird Street inches from his property line. This is not a new idea and had previously been tried before in a case called Staley versus City of Meadowlands. In that case, the Staleys had set their nonconforming fence inches from the property line so they would not have to get the non-consenting owner's approval. The court did not buy it, and you should not buy it here either. Here's what the court said about that slippery slope. To accept the Staley's interpretation would be to allow an individual by his own act to evade the objective of the ordinance. Thus, an individual could build a fence 1 inch or 1 foot from the property line and assert that the fence was non-abutting. That's exactly this case. Criswell needs Mr. Lerite's consent, but Mr. Lerite cannot give it because Bird Street is a lifeline to his business. The elimination or proposed elimination of Bird Street would eliminate approximately 50 parking spaces and the access to North Hill, both of which are critical to his shop that he has been running for 2 decades and has been sustaining his family with. Most disheartening of all is that there is a simple solution. Criswell could give him the parking spots right behind, right where their boundary is. Their own website says, as the college's vision expands, so does the importance of its relationship with the community. This is a tenet that they are blatantly ignoring here at all costs. They refuse to work with us. So we come to you. Help us inform the city ordinance that has the objective that all abutting property owners consent before a street is abandoned, so that Randy and all the affected businesses can continue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Ann Lerite.
Hi, good morning. I'm a little nervous. I've never done this before. But as mentioned, my name is Ann Lerite. My husband and I work and own the property that is located at 709 North Haskell Avenue between Bird Street and Junior Street. It's directly next to Criswell College. We are very concerned about the proposed closure of Bird Street, as it is very actively used for parking in our neighborhood. There is no public parking on Haskell Avenue or on the south side of Junior Street. So the closure of Bird Street would mean not only that I would lose parking that I use every day for work, but that our other employees and customers would be left with nowhere to park in close proximity to our business. I took pictures of the cars that are parked on Bird Street so that you can see for yourselves that this street is used daily by all of us that live and work in our neighborhood. This picture was taken just yesterday, and I brought copies for your review, so I think you guys may have those. In addition to our business, the residents of the property located at the corner of Junius and Haskell will be left with no additional parking for their friends or family that may visit their homes if the public parking on Bird Street is gone. They have all signed a letter stating their opposition to the closure of Bird Street, and I think that their voices also deserve to be heard, as they will not only work but actually live in the neighborhood and will be directly affected by the closure of Bird Street. I have brought copies of their signed letters for your reference and review. In addition to the signed letters from the residents who live in this neighborhood, we have also reached out to the Peak Edition, our neighborhood association, and they, too, have submitted a letter to the City Council in support of us on this matter. I would very much appreciate if each of you will consider how the closure of Bird Street will affect those of us who live and work in this neighborhood on a daily basis, and respectfully ask that you either deny or postpone the abandonment of Bird Street until such a time that a mutually agreeable solution can be made for all of the parties that are affected by this proposed abandonment. Thank you so much for your time.
You.
Randy Lerite.
Good morning to each of you. Sorry, like my wife, I'm a little nervous on this. My name is Randy Lerite, and our family owns the property that abuts Criswell College on Bird Street. Is this better? This property has been in our family for close to 20 years now. As with most small business owners, we've put all of our time, money, and years of effort in maintaining our business, so this is truly a very personal matter to us. I'm here today to discuss Criswell College's proposal to close down Bird Street. While we are not against development, we are opposed to how Criswell College has gone about pursuing this development. For many years, we have shared a neighborly relationship with Criswell College. During that time, and presently, we both share and use Bird Street on a daily basis. Bird Street is the only street that has public parking in close proximity to our business. There is no parking on Haskell, south side of Junius, or Gaston.
Criswell has now come up with a proposal to close down this public street. But instead of coming to us, showing their plans, and discussing how it will affect our business, property, customers, and employees, they instead went directly to the city and submitted this proposal without the consent of the abutting property owners and with no regard as to how it will affect us, nor our community. Now I'm faced with the uncomfortable position of standing here before each of you and ask that you deny Criswell their application for the closing of Bird Street, or at least deny them this application until such time that we can sit down and discuss a mutually acceptable solution for this development to move forward. I would also like to mention our good friends and our neighborhood church, Grace Methodist Church, which are here today. They also have much need for parking, and this will also affect them. I want to thank each of you for giving me the time to speak today, hear our perspective, and hopefully you will consider denying the closing of Bird Street. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Philip Canati.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Philip Canati, and I'm here in opposition to Criswell's proposed abandonment of Bird Street so they can build a grand new entrance to their private campus. Criswell is attempting to abandon city ordinance that requires the abutment and the abutting owners to consent. And they're attempting to do that by setting the red line 1 foot beneath the property line. The proposed abandonment of Bird Street, however, is improper no matter where they set that red line. And the simple reason for it is Bird Street is still actively used by the community. And Criswell College is asking you to ignore the community's uses to benefit a private religious entity. The city cannot legally close Bird Street that benefits the community for private use. And it's simple reason, it's an abuse of power. Each of you all know what that means. Now, when I was asked about this, I was thinking, well, why would y'all consider the abandonment of Bird Street? Maybe it's because you were told it has been abandoned. It's no longer in use. I know that Randy and Ann Lee Wright submitted some photographs to you showing pictures of the traffic on it. It's daily. There's 30, 40, 50 parking spaces that are used. But even if the street had temporarily been in non-use, that does not constitute abandonment for purposes of the Dallas City Council's ordinance. The failure to use a street must be long continued and unexplained to give inference of an abandonment to permit this type of action to take place. Not the case here. Bird Street hasn't been abandoned. It's used each and every day by members of the community, business folks, residents coming to visit the business, residents going to Baylor Hospital. And once that street has been dedicated to public use, the city cannot use it or dedicate it or revert it for a purpose inconsistent with that, so long as the community is still using the property. As a final point, there's a street valuation. The proposed valuation, you heard it read earlier, is 17,700 square feet they propose abandoning for a mere $12 a square foot. The plans that I have seen by Criswell College don't refer to a groundwater or wastewater basement. It's an entrance for their campus. They want to close a street, put up an archway, and have a beautiful entrance for their new campus. It's not appropriate, and what I would like to do for you guys, or ask you all to do this morning, is to take into consideration the community which we serve. And we have to put the benefits and uses of the community ahead of a private individual, or in this case, a well-funded private entity seeking only to increase its own well-being. I appreciate your time, and thank you for your consideration this morning.
Thank you.
Mary Creamer.
Mayor Rawlings, thank you for the opportunity to speak to this. We do ask you to consider the community interest as you look at this issue. In fact, the speakers before me mentioned Baylor, the only
recipients of traffic who actually could pass through Bird Street and benefit from traffic to it have actually written us letters, these are available to you. They're written to Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, but they are in favor of it. One of those neighbors is actually here to speak in order. Baylor Hospital has written us a letter in favor of closing or abandoning Bird Street. We have letters, in fact, I have a placard I can show you. On the north, our neighbors are in favor of it, on the east, on the west, and on the south, all the way around. 7-Eleven, the hotel that's just to our north, Baylor, and two business owners who are just to our west. And then on the south, Baylor owns all of that property. The only neighbors who are actually speaking in opposition to this are neighbors who want to sell us their property at above market value, and we can't do that. And so we have the opportunity to move, and we have dotted our I's and crossed our T's to follow all the procedures to get this recommendation before you today, having done everything that's necessary. Our neighbors are in favor of it. Our one neighbor who's opposed to it actually loses nothing that belongs to him. It isn't our responsibility that he bought a piece of property with no parking available to it. We have been good neighbors for over a dozen years, allowing him to use our parking with no rent whatsoever. We have done that. We cannot just give up our property because he did not buy parking with his property. And so the opportunity for us to move forward is tied to our ability to incorporate Bird Street. We will be able to unify our campus, keep traffic from running through where our students are trying to cross from the parking lot to the buildings, to the education building, for us to be able to expand and include a residence hall. This would allow that to be on the same piece of property and not have traffic flowing through the middle of it. We even have cars come up the wrong way on that street. It's a pedestrian hazard. So it would allow us to unify the campus. It does allow us to beautify the campus. We don't apologize for that. We're trying to improve the neighborhood. That's one of the reasons we believe Baylor is in favor of it. It gives us a really lovely entrance to the campus and a pavilion for people to walk down. There's still the ability for people to walk through. We have a tremendous amount of pedestrian traffic even right now. And we believe sincerely that it improves not only our ability to serve our students, but our neighbors' ability, because we will reach more students. They will buy coffee from Starbucks, and as you'll see in the 7-Eleven letter that you have a copy of, they'll buy things from the 7-Eleven store. We believe all of that's good for the community, and we believe it's good for Dallas to have a higher education institution within a mile of downtown that's doing a good work, even in the area of education. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Sidney.
Good morning, members of City Council, Mayor, and Mayor Pro Tem. I'm here to voice my support for the Bird Street, or partial abandonment of Bird Street. My name is David Sidney, and I reside...
If you could speak in the mic, sorry. There we go. Thanks.
Sorry. My name is David Sidney, and I reside at 5615 Yolanda Circle in Dallas. I'm here to voice my support and urge the City Council to approve this abandonment request and sale of the Criswell Center. They're one of several institutions in the area that are important to our city and provide economic growth and stability in the Gaston-Baylor Hospital District. I currently own a two-story office building located at 3910 Gaston Avenue, which is across North Hill Avenue from Criswell College, and can attest to the fact that the college has been a good constructive neighbor. The Criswell College staff has been kind enough to show me their plans for their site, and I believe that their proposed redevelopment will only continue to enhance the area. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
David Dallas Cothram.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Dallas Cothram, 900 Jackson Street. You know, this may have gone on for a number of years. Dr. Kramer, though, has only been the president for 3 years. We'd be, as one of the owners said, we'd be happy to postpone and try and work on this. But it's an unusual situation that they have two buildings, one of which is residential, and they have no parking. I mean, they don't have any spaces. They rely 100% on street parking that is, first come, first serve. So they have two buildings, one multifamily and one commercial, that just is, they're nonconforming. And so that's, you see this all over the city. This is a common thing in Councilmember Kingston's district and Medrano's district too, where you have bars and nightclubs that operate. So, you know, if you look at, you know, if you look at Exhibit 2, you know, the other folks around us are in favor of this, including Baylor. There's been a lot of outreach. The new hotel that's being redone, a $30 million project, they're in favor. 7-Eleven. So we've tried to reach out to the folks. I think there are an opportunity to find some compromise on this. I talked to Mr. Medrano's plan commissioner. This is sort of a planning effort. I don't know so much that the street's going to close. It's going to close to vehicular traffic, but it could be a promenade with a lot of landscaping and nice that is open, and their part of Byrd would still be available, and those streets up there. If you look at the parking spaces, if you look at Exhibit 3, those spaces can remain, and it's an extra wide street. There's no reason they can't still have those six parking spaces. But the remainder of Byrd Street, and we don't abut them, you know, y'all abandon streets all the time. I mean, we went through the city process, the departments, you know, evaluated it, each of them. We met the standards. You know, Ms. Pearson in our office, who ran your office for many, many years, did the normal work that we would do on this, and Byrd's not used for that many car trips a day. I think we could turn it into urban and walkable, and that's really what this council gives us a lot of direction, and the plan commission does, is we want things to be more walkable and more urban. Well, here you have an urban campus where we have an opportunity to stitch things together, and perhaps we can't solve the problem of having bought a property two decades ago that doesn't have any parking. That's a common problem where owners do this, and they rely 100% on Delta credits. So, you know, that won't change, but I do think there's an opportunity where they could have their part of the street, and you could end up with this, you know, a nice, walkable, urban, new campus, and a rising tide lifts all ships. I mean, Baylor is the largest property owner in the area. If they didn't think that as another institutional user we were going to improve that area, I suspect they would not be favorably inclined, which they are. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Kevin Steele.
Mayor Rawlings, thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of this action. In the packet of letters that we've provided for you, you'll see a letter from Baylor Hospital saying that we have been working with our neighbors for the last 2 years so that every campus improvement we make benefits the entire neighborhood. And that is why our neighbors adjacent on the east side, 7-Eleven, on the north, Atlantic Hotels, on the west, Granite Capital Incorporated, and the offices of a lawyer's office, and then Baylor, who is just joining us on three different sides, the west, southwest, and south, are all in favor of us being able to go forward with this. We have been talking with them. We have been talking with Mr. LaRavite, who spoke earlier. I met with him 1 year ago, talked to him about what we were planning on doing, and it was my understanding coming out of that meeting that as long as we preserved the parking adjoining his building on Byrd Street, that he was fine. And so that is why we did the partial abandonment that preserved his parking on Byrd Street. You'll see in the picture that was provided for you, even the worst driver in Dallas can get access and egress from those five parking places without difficulty. When we realized that he was still opposing it, we met with him and his lawyers, and they told us that if we would be willing to give him 20 to 25 parking places that he could sell to another person, that he would not oppose it. We thought that was unreasonable, especially given that we, for more than a decade, have provided parking to him free of charge in our parking lot. The fact of the matter is, as has been said, he bought a non-conforming property with not one single parking place that he can reserve from us or reserve for himself. And he is expecting Criswell College and the city of Dallas to provide parking for him. The statutes or the law code that was presented to you by the lawyer has already been looked out by the attorney for the city of Dallas. He said that those case law that was presented was irrelevant to this matter, and that is why he brought this on to you. He thought it was good for the city of Dallas. At this point, we simply ask you to look at the merits of what we're trying to do for our community. Realize we have done, fulfilled all of the obligations that the city of Dallas has for abandonment. We have given the city of Dallas almost $250,000 to buy this. And we have the overwhelming support of our neighbors on every side. We would simply ask that you please, at this point, give us the same consideration that you give to any property owner within the city of Dallas. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you.
Josiah Presley.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and council members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Before I begin, though, I would like to ask everyone who is here from Criswell to please stand in support of. Thank you. I'm a student at Criswell. I am starting my senior year there, so I've been there for the last 3 years. And as you guys are considering this decision, I just have two considerations I would request of you as you're making your decision. The first is a consideration of pedestrian safety. As a student for the last 3 years, I cannot tell you how many times I have gotten out of my car at school to walk across the street to get onto the campus, and I've had a car come zooming down the street, and we get locked in this awkward dance of whether or not the car is going to stop, whether or not they're going to let me cross, or they kind of slow down but then speed back up. And just this awkward just moment of whether or not I'm going to make it across the street or not. Obviously, it has not ended poorly for me because I stand before you today. But that does raise the concern of what happens on the moment when a student isn't paying attention or a driver isn't paying attention, and then we'd have a tragedy on our hands. The second consideration I would ask you to consider in your decision-making is cosmetic in nature. To be honest, as a student, as a prospective student coming to the school, I was not won over at all by the way the school looked on the outside. It wasn't until I actually got inside the school and I was able to meet the professors and spend time with the people there that I was won over to coming to the school, but that's because the school on the outside, to be honest, is intimidating. Our main entrance looks more like a back entrance than it does a main entrance. And I think it would be amazing, awesome, as a student, to be able to come to a campus where our main entrance is secure and is as friendly and as welcoming as the faculty and the staff that we find inside who are so devoted to the students, to our betterment as people, as Christians, and ultimately, because of that, as citizens of this great nation. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This concludes the speakers on the item.
Thank you. Chairman Kleiman defers the motion to Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to deny this item.
Motion is second. Discussion? Mr. Medrano.
I actually am not a really don't like abandonment. And when I do abandon a street or support it, I make sure the impact it's going to cause in the community. And this one is just going to cause a whole lot of impact to businesses, to neighbors, to residents, to our churches. Grace United, thank you for being here. And I just can't support this time. I did defer this a month, and I gave the group times to come together, and they did not. So I'm definitely have to deny this at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGew.
Just a question. You're denying this without prejudice?
Without prejudice.
Thanks.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 47. Item 47 is an ordinance abandoning a portion of an alley easement and a utility and access easement to Inwood National Bank of Dallas, the abutting owner, containing a total of approximately 7,446,000 square feet of land located near the intersection of Inwood Road and Newmore Avenue, and authorizing the quitclaim and providing for the dedication of a total of approximately 16,388,000 square feet of land needed for street rights of way and wastewater easement.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman.
Motion to approve.
Motion and second. Discussion. Mr. Medrano.
Is this District 2, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I actually deferred it last month because I was trying to get a hold of some of the residents. I haven't been able to. A couple of them have been out of town. Can you give me a couple weeks and I can work on that? Thank you.
I'm sorry. So what?
Just
do you
to defer it for a couple of weeks.
So you're making a substitute?
Yeah, yes. I'll accept that.
He's saying yes. He'll
okay,
accept
it. Wait. Let's just be clear. We have a substitute motion. Let's just make it a substitute motion because one is to approve and one is to defer. A substitute motion to defer to when?
What's the next agenda?
October 11th.
October 11th.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank
I'll
you.
Second that.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay. You'll second it. Thank you. Any discussion? Mr. McDonough. Oh, nothing. All right. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your
I'll
morning
do
agenda.
Item 33.
Okay. Agenda item 33, authorize one settlement in lieu of proceeding further with condemnation in the condemnation suit style City of Dallas v. Diane Tesman Slayton et al. Of approximately 26 acres of land for right-of-way and approximately 75,722,000 square feet of land in easement located in Dallas County, Texas for the Southwest 120-96-inch water transmission pipeline project. And two, the deposit of the settlement amount reached through court for an amount not to exceed the amount of the settlement amount of $1,081,110. This item was pulled by Councilmember Griggs.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion and second. Discussion. Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Mr. Griggs opposed. Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your morning agenda.
Thank you. We have no closed session. We'll meet back promptly at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Good afternoon. It is 1:02 p.m. The Dallas City Council will now take up our public hearings and related actions for this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Narvaez would like to be recognized at this time.
All right. There he is.
Hi. Hello. Thank you. I move to defer item number 48 until October 25th, 2017.
And a motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to your zoning consent docket. Your zoning consent agenda item consisted of agenda items 48 through 54. 48 was previously deferred. 49 is being pulled by Councilmember Caraway, Mayor Pro Tem Caraway. And agenda item 52 is also being pulled by Mayor Pro Tem Caraway. Therefore, your consent zoning docket consists of agenda items 50, 51, 53, and 54. I'll read those items into the record. Agenda item 50 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for a commercial amusement inside use limited to a dance hall on property on the northeast side of C.F. Hahn Service Road, southeast of Ed Road. Agenda item 51 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development District Number 385 on property on the southwest corner of Inwood Road and Walnut Hill Lane. Agenda item 53 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of a specific use permit number 1679 for a drive-through service in a financial institution with drive-in windows on property on the south side of East Colorado Boulevard, west of North Vang Boulevard. And agenda item 54 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 1982 for a bar, lounge, or tavern and an inside commercial amusement limited to a Class A dance hall on property on the south corner of Elm Street and North Crowder Street. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC's recommendation on any of the consent zoning items that were read into the record? Are there any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor?
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion is carried.
Agenda item 49 is a public hearing and one, a resolution terminating existing deed restrictions, and two, an ordinance granting a planned development subdistrict for O-2-D office subdistrict, barber and beauty shop, and massage establishment uses on property on the north line of Herschel Avenue, east of Throckmorton Street. This item was pulled by Councilmember Carraway.
Thank you. I entertain a motion, Mr. Kingston. We have a second. Thank you. Motion is second. Discussion. Mr. Carraway.
Mayor, I'm not going to hold this up, but I did want to just get a little clarification as relate to someone can explain to me about parking with this particular facility. Is it something dealing with parking, Mr. Kingston or Mr. Kleinman, as relate to parking with this particular? Well, then let me just ask the staff.
Yes, so the proposal, David Collison with Sustainable Development and Construction. The proposal recommendation on the PD does include a parking requirement for office that's slightly reduced at one per 372 square feet.
So we're reducing parking for the barbershop, beauty shop. What's happening with that?
Yeah, that's a general parking requirement for the development of one space.
I'm not going to hold this. It's not my intention to hold this up, but it's my intention to bring to our attention, to the attention, that we're reducing parking, but then there are certain restrictions that have been levied on other businesses that are demanded to have X number of parking. What caught my attention was the fact that we put a hammer down on certain people with parking, but yet we ease up restrictions on other folks, okay? So I just want an even playing field for other small businesses. It's not this business. It's not my intention to hold up this particular business, but it is my intention to make sure that we understand that there are other businesses that cannot open because of restricted parking, but then at some point we kind of find ways to relax the rules for certain other projects. I just want us to be a little bit more considerate as it relates to what we're doing and our process that other small businesses that do not have all of the parking, if they're one parking place short, then they are denied and cannot open. That's true with 1011 Grill and some other places that do not have the adequate parking. So I want to make that point. So with that, Mayor, I'm going to vote with it.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 52, a public hearing and a resolution terminating deed restrictions on property on the southwest corner of East Illinois Avenue and South Denley Drive.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 25 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received one reply in favor and one in opposition.
Thank you.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. Before I make the motion, do I need to make the motion now? I'll move to approve the zoning change for the recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Second. All right. Motion is second. Thank you. Discussion, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. I pulled this morning, and I was going to defer it, and I had instructed staff to defer this item. One, because they applied for a general merchandise license that would allow them to potentially sell beer and wine. The reason, one, because there are so many general merchandise permits being issued, and they don't have to come before us, the council, but they're able to secure a permit. And without knowing, I have a litany of general merchandise permits in District 4. And I'm battling with one now in the Crest Shopping Center, because they're general merchandise, but they're able to sell beer and wine and tobacco, and there's nothing that I can do about it. So what I've asked the staff to do is to make me aware when there is a general merchandise issue on the table, so that we can kind of get a handle on those and speak to the people prior to them and prior to us approving the final steps for that. So I did pull it this morning, and I want to ask the gentleman to come down. Norma, if you would, bring him down. And I'm pleased with what I have heard. I'm going to have Norma with him so she can kind of help me out a little bit. Norma, so I want to know what kind of project he's doing and what he intends to do with the landscaping, and is his intent to be a general store or just the furniture deal that he has already in existence on Lancaster? Talking to the microphone.
Is, Norma, would you, we need Spanish in the microphone too.
Yeah.
Okay. His plan is just to sell furniture, and the furniture is going to be inside the property.
Okay.
It's not going to be like the previous business. Okay. And the city required him to plant some trees, and he's planted 22 trees and new grass. And it's 14 parking spaces, and it's a bigger space than his previous business.
Okay. All right. What, and let him say it in Spanish so he can be on the record. Even though I won't be able to understand it.
Oh, mi plan está de 14 parqueaderos, 22 árboles, y baño de inválidos. Es el baño más ancho para los inválidos. Me pidieron baño también. Es todo lo que...
Okay.
Renovela propiedad.
And you're not going to be selling no beer and wine?
No.
Okay.
No es moque, no drink.
All right. And it's very important, and thank you very much. That's enough. That's enough. I'm going to ask for my council to approve this, but I want the staff to know, and I want the council to know, that we're going to have to change the process a little bit just so that we can be made aware. There are a number of general merchandise applications and permits that have been just automatically given. And this one was one that I managed to catch, and I wanted to make sure that I brought the owner in so that I could get at least an understanding. Not that it gives us the power to just knock it completely out, but it certainly gives us a protective step prior to them just automatically being able to begin to sell alcohol, tobacco, anywhere and all over the district. So with that, Mayor, I'll yield for now, and we can go from there.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, and Mayor Pro Tem Curry, thank you for bringing that up. We don't have that issue in Pleasant Grove. It's D and D1 mainly, everything, but I know that's a problem for you. But if David or Neva could come down, I might have some questions or ask for their commentary. I'm going to try to do a little guidance for you to maybe how you can improve that. That's my goal. And I just recently did a land use study on Buckner, and we tightened up the PD 366. I guess my question, Neve and David, are by terminating these deed restrictions, could that open up future tire, auto, smoke shop, and other uses? So that's a concern I have when we remove those deed restrictions. That's why we typically put those on there. That way we can have some control. You might comment about how perhaps a land use study in that corridor where he's concerned with the majority of these might be utilized. And then if it's made into a planned development district, for instance, then he could obviously have, SUP requirements on certain uses, or just take them out of the PD altogether. But please comment on that, so give him some steerage.
So the deed restrictions, the reason the gentleman is here is the use he can do by right with the deed restrictions, he is limited to where he can put a fence, and the fence has to be a wood fence. So that's why he wants to remove the deed restrictions. It's because he wants to put a wrought iron fence around it instead of a solid wood fence. So for him, he doesn't need to come in to ask to be able to have that use. He's already allowed that. It's just a fence issue. So he would be able to do any other general merchandise or food store, not just the thrift shop that he wants to do.
Well, again, my editorial comment is going to be that, you know, what he's doing today may be great with a furniture store, but it could be tomorrow's tire shop or automotive or smoke shop or maybe some other negative type use that Councilman Carraway does not want to see in his district. So, but I would hope that they could get with him where it's plausible or possible in his district so he can look at those alternative mechanisms to stop that. But that's too blanket and too open. Thanks for the help on that.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 55 was deleted on the addendum. Therefore, we'll move to agenda item 56. 56 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development subdistrict for MF-3, multiple family and tower antenna for cellular communication uses on property on the south corner of Wellborn Street and Congress Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 453 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 101 replies in favor and 63 in opposition. Due to the opposition of owners of more than 20% of the land within 200 feet of the area of request, this will require a three-quarters vote to approve.
Are there any speakers in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC's recommendation? Mr. Mayor, we have several speakers. The first speaker may come forward.
Okay. So you don't have a list of people?
No.
All right. So if you want to speak, why don't you just line up behind this first speaker, okay?
And I have some handouts.
All right. Give right here. Just hand out right here.
Do you have any handouts?
You've got handouts. Okay. And how many? So we've got these speakers here. This is it? Okay. 3, 6. Okay.
3 minutes. Each speaker.
You don't have to speak for 3 minutes. You can kind of tell us where you are on this. And,
okay. Please state your name and address for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you.
My name is Marcus Pestel. I live at 2805 Wellborn Street. So good afternoon, members of the City Council and Dallas City Mayor. Obviously, I'm a homeowner on Wellborn Street, and I'm requesting that you vote today to deny case Z167190. And to be clear, in that denial, we're seeking a directive that you ask the developer to continue to work with us on a different kind of building form, which would be a mid-rise building. I'm making this appeal with a large group of area homeowners who chose to appear themselves or send someone on their behalf. And I just want to quickly ask those who are here today for that purpose to briefly stand. While this application has been called the best outcome for the neighborhood by the Oaklawn Committee and has the support of the City Plan Commission, it does not have the support of the area homeowners and residents you see standing before you. Thank you, everybody. If you can take your seats again. So, members of the Council, Dale City Mayor, we appreciate the opportunity to be heard today. As homeowners, we're fully aware that today's land values no longer support the type of 2- and 3-story single-family and low-rise condos that define this pocket neighborhood, which has MF3 zoning and allows 4-to-1, FAR, as well as unlimited height. In your handout there, you can see a couple of aerial views of, what this pocket neighborhood looks like today and what it would look like at a 4-to-1 FAR build-out, a by-right scenario, if you will. Looking at that build-out, you can probably understand why it makes us feel uncomfortable. We also understand that there's nothing we can do about that by right scenario. And the applicant that's here today, Toll Brothers, is not here for a by right proposal. They're seeking approval for a significantly larger building with a 5.5-to-1 FAR, which is almost 50% than what's allowed by right. If you approve that today, we ask what's next. 6-to-1 FAR, 7-to-1 FAR, even more. The sky is literally the limit here. As a group of owners and residents, we believe development that requires zoning variances should deliver better outcomes than by right, and in as many aspects as possible. Our starting point for that better outcome is a mid-rise building. Today, we ask that you take into account how your decision today delivers a better outcome for these homeowners and residents. Current zoning cannot prevent by-right towers being built, but your decision today can be effective in managing to better outcomes that we envision. We reject the idea that this application should be granted because towers are the penultimate destiny of our neighbourhood due to a decades-old zoning error. Zoning is a work in progress. In considering today's case, we ask that you give responsible consideration to how the area did develop despite the zoning.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Thank you, Marcus. I concur with Marcus as a homeowner in the area, and I represent not only myself, but also my 88-year-old neighbor, Mrs. Pink, who says if there were a fire anywhere in our neighborhood within 2 blocks each way, I do not think the Dallas Fire Department could get any equipment in because the streets are unusually narrow and these are parked, and there are parked cars every day and night on our street. It's next to impossible for my helper to find available parking space. I need help since I am very elderly, and this parking problem has been going on since the huge condo was built just south of us and the smaller building across the street that they were obviously built 2 years ago. So Mrs. Pink just goes on to concur with Marcus and myself that we are not opposed to development in our neighborhood. We would just like reasonable and sensible development that allows us to stay safe. We also have a group of widows who meets in our community every month, and they complain that they don't want to come because they can't find parking, and the parking is just so ridiculously difficult. So I ask you to please consider our request. And Mr. Kingston, I know we're in your district, and I hope that you will push for us to have reasonable development. Thank you.
Ma'am, would you please state your name and address for the record?
Yes. Thank you. My name is Joy Kirsch, and my address is 2828 Hood Street, number 506.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, I'm Susan Murphy, and I speak on behalf of myself and my neighbor, Laura Salela. I also concur with Joy and Marcus about not wanting this new development to occur. I'll read Laura's statement. Most honorable members of the Dallas City Council, regarding opposition to Toll Brothers' proposed high-rise, Wellborn, and Congress. Another commitment negates my ability to attend today's meeting. I've asked one of our neighbors to read this on my behalf. My husband and I moved into the plaza of Turtle Creek in 2003. The building is at Hood and Congress, 1 block south of the above-referenced high-rise. We selected this location because of the quaint neighborhood. At that time, there was no street congestion, no dust, no jackhammers, just peace and quiet. We expect and promised development, but we've already seen what negative changes have occurred due to the mid-rise Cantabria apartments built a few years ago, which aligns our building. Our neighborhood does not need another large apartment complex. The streets are so narrow that it's virtually impossible to drive without having to stop behind a parked car to let another oncoming car pass. Getting a fire truck to maneuver through this neighborhood could be impossible. How can it make sense or be safe to add 270 new rental units? Not only do we foresee a decline in our property value, but the added people and the cars would threaten our accessibility and protection. Please vote against this proposal. Thank you. Laura G. Salela, and her address is 2828 Hood Street, unit number 1003. And my name is Susan Murphy. I'm at 3535 Gillespie Street, unit number 104.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Rita Seamer. I live at 2828 Hood Street, unit number 1402, here in Dallas. I'm speaking today on my own behalf and on behalf of one of my neighbors, two of my neighbors, Roger and Margaret Anderson of 2828 Hood Street, and I don't have their unit number. I'll read their letter. Dear Dallas City Council, it is our understanding that on September 27, 2017, the council will be considering an application to approve a proposed high-rise at Wellborn and Congress. Unfortunately, due to prior travel commitments, we cannot attend in person. As residents of the Oaklawn community, we have genuine safety concerns regarding this proposal based on our communications with Dallas first responders, particularly our fire department. This high-density proposal inserted into a neighborhood with narrow streets is a tragedy waiting to happen. We certainly do not oppose responsible, prudent development. To the contrary, it is beneficial and absolutely necessary. However, this proposal does not allow for adequate access by first responders, particularly fire suppression vehicles. We would implore the council to listen to the warnings from our city's safety professionals and deny this application as proposed. We thank you very much for your service to our city and community. Roger and Margaret Anderson of 2828 Hood Street, Dallas, Texas, 75219.
Thank you.
I also concur in what they have said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
My name is David Robinson. I live at 2828 Hood Street. I am the immediate past president of the Plaza Turtle Creek Residents Association. And I will read portions of the letter that my wife and I submitted to the council. It was submitted last night by email. I hope that your office received a copy. My wife and I believe that the increased population density in this area will adversely affect the infrastructure of the neighborhood, intensify an increasing difficult traffic influx, and change the character of the neighborhood. We are not opposed to development in the neighborhood, nor the construction of a mid-sized residential building on the affected area. As has been noted, the narrow streets do limit the accommodation of increased passenger and service vehicle traffic occasioned by this proposed development. As also been noted, there has been some concern expressed regarding safety with this new proposal, and it is my opinion that the narrow roads make the deployment of standard firefighting equipment and procedures in the event of an emergency above a 10th floor problematic. We hope that the developer can continue to work with the local homeowners associations and homeowners in the neighborhood, and that we can come to an accommodation that would accommodate both the existing neighborhood concerns and the business needs of the developer. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
My name is Arnold Mosishek, and I live at 3708 Brown Street. And I am here representing myself and William and Amanda Farrar, who live at 3538 Gillespie, number 301. They are sorry that they are unable to attend this meeting today. They live with their two children, ages 7 and 8, at 3535 Gillespie, about 125 feet from the site of this proposed development. They and I ask you to deny this variance request. They've lived in the area since 2007 and watched it grow. None of us are opposed to new development and redevelopment. There have been several mid-rise developments built nearby, and we accept that this development is inevitable. However, we ask that you deny this request to build a high-rise at this location for the reasons of traffic issues and incompatibility with the area. The several mid-rises built in the immediate area have already caused hundreds of cars per day to cut through the side streets on their way to the Dallas Tollway or elsewhere. When we walk our dogs or take the children for a walk, they are routinely almost hit by cut-through drivers who don't even stop at the stop signs. In addition, we all point out how narrow our streets are. At present, one of the side streets allow parking, and it's usually full. This narrows the remaining street width to barely allow passenger vehicles to pass each other. They routinely fold their mirrors to meet cars and must go 1 to 2 miles an hour to avoid a hit when meeting a vehicle. Each morning, they travel to Congress Avenue and Oak Lawn and wait at the light to take their children to school. There's a dog daycare facility at Oak Lawn and Congress, and it's typically a 2 to 3 light cycle to wait to turn left onto Oak Lawn. If you allow this variance, there will be 1,300 plus trips per day added to the already taxed street load, according to the traffic study. We already suffer cut-through traffic through the neighborhood, and that will only be increased with 1,300 plus trips per day, as we've noted. In conclusion, we request that you deny this application and instead allow a mid-rise development. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good afternoon. My name is Ann Sapphire. I live at 2828 Hood Street, apartment 702. And I concur also with the opinions of the previous speakers. And I am reading a letter from another resident who could not be here today. Her name is Louise Baca, and she lives at 2828 Hood Street, Unit 1308. Dear City Council members, I oppose the rezoning proposal requested by Toll Brothers, which would allow for a residential high-rise far in excess of currently allowed density limits to be built in the center of our neighborhood. I urge you to consider not only our narrow interior neighborhood street infrastructure. These streets cannot accommodate the increased passenger and service vehicle traffic that would be generated by this development, but also to consider the concerns this proposal raises amongst city officials responsible for public safety. Those officials, including Dallas Assistant Chief and Fire Marshal, have spoken publicly about my neighborhood's narrow access roads. These narrow access roads are unsuitable for the deployment of standard firefighting equipment and procedures in the event of a high-rise emergency and would adversely impact both response times and on-site emergency measures. I would like the developer to work with us on a lower-rise design that balances their desire for new development density with our desire for scale that is more appropriate to the existing neighborhood. Any decision should represent and respect the interests of all neighborhood stakeholders. We encourage you to ask Toll Brothers to work with the neighbors on a compromise solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean Garman. I live at 3615 Gillespie Street, and I stand here representing myself as well as I am acting president of our small condo HOA. I read a prepared statement last time I stood here a couple of weeks ago, and I'm just standing here on record in support of my friends and neighbors in opposition to this, and I hope that you guys would reconsider. We, as mentioned, we're not opposed to development. We just think that this development is inappropriate for our tight little neighborhood. So thank you.
Next speaker.
Good afternoon. My name is Ellen Johnston. I live at 2828 Hood Street, Unit 1606, and I'm here also to represent Dr. William and Sherry Spencer, who live at 2828 Hood Street, number 1603. And basically, we would just like to echo the sentiments that have already been addressed by my fellow neighbors. We feel that the increased density is a major threat to the safety of the neighborhood because of the traffic and the inaccessibility because of, for emergency vehicles. And we hope that you would take this under consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any speakers in the audience that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation? We have a speaker coming forward.
Mayor, council members, Dallas Cott from 900 Jackson Street, representing Toll Brothers. To be succinct, I may speak for the majority of the time, and we have a couple other speakers here as well. So PD 193, if it's not council members Medrano and Kingston, it's a little bit like flying a time machine. It uses the old development code that predates, you know, goes back into the mid-1980s and before. So it's like almost a different city, if you will, in terms of what the rules are. And so this has MF3 zoning. We have an unlimited number of units that we can do and unlimited height. So while I understand that the folks, and you heard a lot of people say, this, the floor area is what controls what we can do. So I'm passing around to you that the site already has the right for a tall building, any height that the FAA would allow. So we can do a tall building. We're actually here, and this is why the Oakland Committee supported it, staff supported it, and then the Plan Commission passed it unanimously on a voice vote. I provided you Commissioner Ridley's comments. We've worked on this for 16 months. The fact that we have MF3 zoning is unusual, and certainly today if we went in and asked for it, we wouldn't get it. But that's the underlying rights. We're asking actually to do fewer units than we were allowed. This was one of the questions that the Plan Commission asked of staff. We could do 400 units with an above-ground parking structure, and we're asking to do 262 units. We're doing much larger units that will rent for more than $3 a foot. So we're doing a $100 million building with parking below grade. We're providing pedestrian amenities, Uber spot, a lot of things. But after the last delay, we've reduced it to 262 units as opposed to the 271. We've limited ourselves to 240 feet in height. A lot of the speakers came from Plaza, which is a high-rise building that's 289 feet in height. So, there's already high-rises in this district. There are also a number of townhomes there, too. Our first part of the building, if you look in the pictures, are townhomes. That's what the streetscape will be. So I'm asking, or Toll Brothers is asking, that you weigh, and I think that's what the Oakland Committee has done, is you balance the fact that our parking is underground and you can't see it. The by right version that we could already do is also a high rise. It would be more units, so more trips. So most of the things that the neighbors didn't like, the by right plan gives them more of that. We have more smaller units. We end up with, you know, more people, more cars, more trips. And you heard people say they didn't like Cantabria. You also had other people say we want a mid-rise. Well, Cantabria is a mid-rise. Which is it? You can't kind of have it both ways. So we're over-parked to code. All along in Oaklawn there are problems with parking. We've got, so I guess to summarize before our other speakers, we've got less units, 262 versus, let's say, 400. We've got a $100 million building with all the parking concealed. It's a 100-year building. The fact is we're doing less density, not more. It's just we have an unusual zoning circumstance in PD 193 that you just don't see very often. So thank you.
Next speaker.
Good afternoon. I'm Brenda Marks. I live at 3925 Gilbert Avenue in Dallas. I formerly lived at 2725 Hood Street. It was the first real estate I ever bought in the city, directly adjacent to this site. and I knew it was MF3 then. I'm here today on behalf of the Oak Lawn Committee. I currently serve as president of the Oak Lawn Committee for 3 more months. Our city hall liaison is currently in New York and couldn't be here today, so I'm subbing for him. Toll Brothers first came to Oak Lawn Committee in May of 2016 with a plan that had minimum setbacks, ignored our urban forum setback above 36 feet, increased the lot coverage to 73% from the allowed maximum of 60%, and limited the height to 199 feet. Your basic ugly suburban box prototype. We have one of those ugly box suburban prototypes sitting at the corner of Hood and Brown today because they wouldn't work with the Oak Lawn Committee. And the neighborhood was split over that as well. A lot in the neighborhood wanted them to go up and shrink the box. At our August 2016 meeting, Toll Brothers updated members. Well, let me back up. They came to us in May. We sent them a rather scathing letter criticizing the plan that they presented, but conceding the giant elephant in the room, the existing MA3 zoning that allows all sorts of things you've just heard about. We strongly encourage Toll Brothers to continue to work with its Welburn, Congress, and Hood Street neighbors. We asked the applicant to look to Plaza 2, which at 289 feet, has buried parking. We wanted them to bury the parking, pursue a smaller building footprint, allowing for more open space, a better landscape plan, and address the urban form on Welburn Avenue. We wanted to make sure that that form interacted with the street in the same way that the Oak Lawn plan encourages it to interact with the street. And they've done that by putting the 3-story townhome units onto Welburn Avenue and setting the tower, shrinking the tower and setting it back. At our August 2016 meeting, Toll Brothers updated members on the status of talks with the neighbors in its most recent plan. As a result, we created a special standing subcommittee to consider all current and future projects in the MF3 area bordered by Cedar Springs, Oak Lawn, Maple, and Turtle Creek. That committee consisted of myself and 4 longtime members with considerable years of experience with PD 193, including 2 design professionals, a developer, and a small business owner. One design professional is an architect, and she lives with her husband and 2 children on Welburn Avenue directly across the street from this site.
Thank you.
May I have a little more time?
Yeah, I'd like to ask.
Okay, please.
Thank you. Their home is directly impacted by whatever happens here. Our subcommittees are governed by our bylaws and PD 193. The MF3 group met formally with Toll Brothers and its representatives 3 times in September through December and communicated via email and phone calls throughout the fall of 2016. We are painfully aware of the split in the neighborhood. I hear from many of my old friends on both sides. Unfortunately, it became apparent that the neighborhood split was not one we were equipped to mediate. So it was our job to try to come up with the best consensus compromise we could. Our mission was to pursue a plan built on principles of PD 193 and the Oak Lawn plan, burying the parking, creating a smaller tower footprint, an attractive urban streetscape along Welburn Avenue, maximize green space, and mitigating potential traffic concerns. This plan, we believe, honors those principles, and we take credit, our design team takes credit for the superior design elements and construction materials that they have promised in this plan. In the face of extreme change and rapidly escalating property values, a lot of our property in PD 193 right now is subject to artificially escalating property values. OLC continues to work hard to honor and preserve the values and standards of PD 193 and the Oak Lawn Plan, a document well ahead of its time you all should read.
Thank you.
I hope you will agree with us on this.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Lucy Soames. I live at 3400 Welburn Street. But 10 years ago, my son bought a property at 2728 Welburn,
And then I lived there for several years, too, after he moved out. But we bought it knowing that it was MF3 zoning, and we're very happy. I just want to say that Toll Brothers has worked so hard with the neighborhood trying to build a very good building with townhouses out in front, and it's very good. And most of these people from the opposition are from the high-rise that's down the street. And they also approved of a Starbucks going in at Congress and Oak Lawn. And that's going to generate a lot more traffic. And the Toll Brothers building proposition has all underground parking. All the parking is going to be inside for drop-offs, for moving, for anything. And also they're giving back 5 feet to the city. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Randy Greenberg, 4210 Fairmont Street in Dallas, Texas. Mayor Rawlins and fellow council members, Philip Kingston asked last time we had the meeting if we could have an extension of 30 days, which I thought was honestly a good idea for them to contact Toll Brothers and share their concerns once again. Not one person contacted Toll Brothers. They were very open to that meeting and hearing what they had to say at your request. So it's interesting today that there's so many people because we had that crowd last time. And I took off, I don't know how many times from work to come here. This is, to me, we're following what is on the books and that they're allowed to do. And we're doing everything in our power to work with the neighborhood. As far as the streets that the woman brought up, those streets are the streets right now. And what they want to do on the same footprint, like you said, on going down Congress, there's no parking on the side of the project. But on Wellborn, on this side, they want to put no parking. So it would be right in front of the project. I went to my fire department, which is their fire department, which is our fire department, and I asked the guys, do you have a problem responding to the plaza, which is on Hood and Congress, in the event of emergency, a high-rise fire, or anything? They're 19 stories, by the way. They said, absolutely not. I said, what if one was built right on Congress and Wellborn? They also said, absolutely not. We would have gone and had them do something if we couldn't get down the street. Yes, it's tight, but I think with the project going up, the safety's only going to get better, and God forbid one of the homes go on fire, they're probably going to maybe use the services that would be available to the high-rise for the home. I'm just, you know, I don't know if that's possible, but they're trying to work with the neighborhood to make it. I don't know if you ever saw the project as it is now. I mean, the one that's built in the 1960s or 70s. It's not that pretty. No offense, guys. So what's going to be going there is going to beautify the area, too. We had the opportunity when we bought, like I told you last time, to look at what the zoning was. We did our due diligence, and now we're getting penalized because now all of a sudden what's coming in the neighborhood is something that they don't want in their neighborhood. But they want a Starbucks down the corner like she just shared with you. Hood Street is 19, the plaza is 19 stories. It's on Congress and Hood. I mean, literally 150 feet away. Now that they're the tall building, they don't want another tall building in the neighborhood. So to me, it's kind of hypocrisy going on right here. And they're hurting us. So now I'll just say one thing. This is going to hurt if this doesn't go through. The people won't be able to rent their apartments if they bought it as an investment. And they're not going to be selling it because no one's going to want to move in there knowing that this is going on. So they already have their properties. Their values have gone up. Ours, we just want to improve the neighborhood. And a lot of people bought it for a living there and a possible investment like that. Buyout that's happening now. So I hope you vote yes for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Todd Doubledee. I live at the property we're talking about. I bought my property about 13 years ago. I had a friend, she's a fellow teacher of mine, and she babysat for a family of a rich developer, and he, you know, gave us advice when we bought our first homes. And he told me if I would buy in this area and if I held on to it long enough, I would, you know, make a nice profit on it and would be able to buy my retirement home. That's my plan. I did my homework in the beginning. I knew it was MF3. Maybe the other people should have done their homework, too, before they bought. Thank you.
Next speaker. Next speaker.
Good
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Herschel Weisfeld. I own property at 3601 Ruth Street at the corner of Hood. I'm a block and a half away from this property. I happen to also be the former vice chair of the Oak Lawn Committee. And I understand the process and procedures that one goes through in order to facilitate the request for variances, zoning changes, and the like. I believe that Toll Brothers has gone through the process. I think they have clearly met with the neighbors. I think they have clearly found compromise. As a property owner, I believe that what Toll Brothers is asking is very fair and very reasonable. We know that the Oak Lawn Committee had the issue with the Starbucks a block away that's going to have more traffic generated counts per day than this property will. We also know that it will take a supermajority of this council to be able to pass this, and I hope that we can ask Philip Kingston to show leadership in supporting the property owners and the neighbors who, if you look geographically at the number of neighbors geographically that support the land mass of this property, it is overwhelmingly in support. Obviously, we understand that there is a concentration of residences and high-rise condominiums and the townhouses that statistically give you other numbers and other issues that you have to evaluate. As stewards for the tax base of our city, I believe that this is an excellent opportunity to build that tax base that is imperative that we must look at collectively how we amplify the taxable values of our neighborhoods as opposed to just consistently raising the tax rate. And this is an opportunity to build that tax base by having a high-end product that's going to be appreciated and respected by the neighbors and by the neighborhood. And I do understand that there are a few that are opposed to it. I had some concerns myself. You should be very aware of that. And in my meetings with Toll Brothers, with the applicant, I think we found compromise. Those that do know me know that I do speak up and I do participate and I do attend meetings. And that's why I'm here today, to ask you to please also be accountable to the taxpayers as well as just your voting base and support this applicant in their request to build a significant property. The inner city is growing. Density is inevitable. Traffic is inevitable, and that's why we're looking at alternative modes of transportation today, and we've been so successful. Look at the new biking opportunities that are coming around as well. I ask you to respectfully consider this applicant and that you support the request of this applicant to be able to build the tower that they're requesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers in the audience that would like to speak in favor?
William Cothram, 900 Jackson Street, representing Toll Brothers. I've been working with the Oak Lawn Committee and people in this neighborhood for more years than I'd really like to say, but somewhere near 35 or 40 years. And Brenda Marks, who's the president of the Oak Lawn Committee, covered many of the things that they ask us to do. But one of the things I want to point out to some of you know about this, but maybe all of you don't. When you do something over in that part of town in PD 193, you better go to the Oak Lawn Committee and you better be prepared to go back a number of different times. You better be prepared to really work hard on where you're going and take a lot of suggestions from those people, because they've been through it. They know the codes. They know what that neighborhood's about, and they drive a hard bargain. We did that. We went with them and worked with them for a long period of time, many different meetings. As far as who's for and against, there are a lot of people down here today. There's more here against today than there are over here. But we handed out a map to you. If you've looked at it, it's green for and red for against. It's overwhelmingly in favor. In fact, very seldom have I worked on something where in the entire notice area you get this kind of participation, particularly on the edges of that area. The zoning we've got today allows us to have as much or more height than we're asking for. It allows us to have more units than we're asking for. Our setbacks are very generous, so we could put the townhouse look on the street level, the things that Oakland committees talked to you about. So somebody could come in there today and just build under the zoning that's on the ground today, and according to the majority of the neighbors and according to the Oakland committee, who really has seen more of these things than anybody, they think that the project that we're bringing forward here is better for the neighborhood than to go in there and build what would be allowed today. We're going to build larger units because that's what the people want. We're going to put our parking underground, which wouldn't be required under the current zoning. So we're not really asking, but for one thing, the floor area ratio, which is something that you almost have to be a zoning junkie to understand what the floor area ratio means, will be slightly more than would have been allowed under the other zoning. However, the number of units, which creates the number of cars, the number of people, will be less. There'll be more trips. The current zoning allows, there is a lot of traffic in Oakland, but the traffic that would be generated under the current zoning is more than what would be generated here.
Thank you.
Fire issue.
Thank you, Ms. Cawthon.
Maybe one more thing to finish.
Okay, real quick.
The fire issue is the same on any high-rise buildings. So I submit to you that the project that we're bringing to you is a better project than we could build today. It's supported by the Oakland Committee and the number of people in the neighborhood.
Thank you
very much for your time. We request your vote on this.
Thank you.
If for some reason
there's
other things you want to work on, we would consider delaying it.
Thank you
very much.
Any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Mr. Kingston.
Mr. Mayor, I move to hold the public hearing open and bring this back October 25th.
Okay. Discussion, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me tell you all, those of you who have come down here, we very much appreciate it. I have to hold the public hearing open because we're going to go back to work on this building to try to get everybody more or less on the same page. So I have to hold it open in case some new people decide they want to comment on whatever plan we come up with, or in case you guys decide that you want to come down and speak again, which is perfectly fine. But keep in mind, those of you who have been down here, especially twice, we heard you. We will remember the previous hearings, and you don't have to come back. I promise. We have it on video. So I don't want you to feel like I'm trying to give you as many hearings as possible. What I'm trying to do is get to a point where everyone understands what's going on here. The problem with this neighborhood is that it was zoned in the 60s to be MF3, unlimited height. I had staff pull the numbers. If the building were built without a zoning change, no zoning change whatsoever, at 80% one bedrooms, 20% two bedrooms, they can get 444 units on the site. At 60% one bedrooms, 30% two bedrooms, and 10% three bedrooms, they can get 424 units on the site. They're proposing 262. So that's where I want to be able to start the discussion when we're talking with the builder, is you all have expressed some very valid sentiments about the ability of the infrastructure of the neighborhood to deal with more people. That's something that makes a lot of sense to council members. That happens in our neighborhoods also. So you're aware, I used to live at this corner. I'm really, really aware of what goes on. I am very moved by the argument that the Starbucks was supported by the neighborhood because its traffic plan is pretty bad. But we need to be very careful about making sure that we are respecting the ability of the infrastructure to serve the needs of the residents. Here's the problem. The people who zone your neighborhood are dead, except for Willie. Did you zone this neighborhood, Willie?
knowing that you would make a fee off of this later. So the Oaklawn plan was a compromise that depended on everybody keeping the zoning they had. Otherwise, it never would have been agreed to. And unfortunately, that means that the mistake that was made, not even in this building, in the old city hall, with regard to the zoning in your neighborhood, could not be corrected and cannot be corrected today. The minute the Toll Brothers filed that application, those rights in MF3 zoning vested. Even if this council voted to downzone that piece of property, Toll Brothers would still be able to build the by right 424 units on that piece of property. Let me tell you how not happy I am about that outcome. It's not great. It's just what's legally required, and we try to do what's legally required around here. I need to hear from FIRE about safety of this plan. Or David, whoever can tell me that this plan is safe. And let me tell you my expectation. My expectation is that staff would never recommend to the CPC and to council a plan that wasn't completely safe. So let's start with reassuring me about that.
Councilman, my name is Rick Butler. I review plans for new construction for Chief Martinez, Fire Marshal. I apologize, I'm not my Class A's. I wasn't expecting to be here. I met with the building representatives a little while back. Two core components that we have to have on any structure is access and water. This site has some access challenges in that we have two sides. We have limited access if there's any aerial operations that need to occur. Common hose lay, which is a distance to the fire apparatus access road, which is the curbs on each side of the building, plan north, plan east, we would allow 200 feet. We have a gap in the center. They proposed on the plan southeast side approximately 90 to 100-foot fire lane. It must be able to support the weight of our equipment, and it has to be 26 feet in width, so we have maximum elevation possible.
That was a great detailed explanation. It would be helpful if you could just tell us if the plan as proposed is safe.
I can tell you that this came across my desk. I would recommend the fire marshal to approve it because although we don't have access entirely around the building, we have it what we deem and acceptable per the code that the building would be appropriate for our actions.
And are you able to get fire apparatus to the plaza, the 19-story building just to the south of this building?
I'm not familiar with that building. I can comment. We've had several projects in that area. Access is challenging. I heard of some folks talking about that. Sales Street, for example, there's parking on both sides. Wing to wing on the mirror of a typical engine is 9 feet 9 inches. Literally, the officers have to lean out both sides, and we have two inches on each side. So it is a challenge to get over there, but I can research that if I need to, so
okay.
I'm not familiar with it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Colleagues, I thought we would be able to work this out in 30 days to get people closer to where they need to be. I am perceiving, based on the complaints of the neighbors, that we need to do some further discussion about how we mitigate the concerns that they have, which primarily were about access both for day-to-day use, for the neighbors who need to get in there and out of there, but also for emergency personnel. Because this is MF3 zoning, I don't have confidence that if we deny it and simply tell them to build under their by right entitlements that we won't wind up with more units, which I think would be counter to what the neighbors want. My fear is that what you have asked us for will result in a worse situation than is being proposed today. We could do that, and then if they built it, you know, I guess I would be vindicated, but that's not what I don't want vindication. What I want is a really great project and good use of the land near your homes, because we do respect the rights that you have to have a great, safe, wonderful neighborhood, which it is today. the bad news is that zoning means that the character of the neighborhood is going to change. Hopefully not drastically, but it definitely is going to change somewhat. And that's just a function of historic mistakes that I'm legally unable to fix. Believe me, I would if I had a legal way to do it. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
I guess I just have one question. The units today, maybe one or two, that we are considering, is there going to be an affordable unit in that project? Can anyone address that question?
We'll go back and look at that. It's been discussed in the past. In this current iteration, we reduced our overall units from in the 270s to the 260s to get the total unit count down. We'll go back and look at that
You said in the past, have you addressed that? If so, what was conclusion? Well, you did address it.
At one time, before it went to Plan Commission, I'm not going to swear the numbers. We were around 300, and we had some affordable at that time. But that plan, that's not the plan you have before you today.
Well, I would like to at least address that, affordable units.
We'll go back and look at that for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. Help me understand why you're not just building by right. What's different in this PD that you couldn't build by right?
Well, that's a good question. So this would be first Toll Brothers' first project in high-rise project in Dallas. They really want to do the nicest rental project that's been done, nicer than glass house. They want something that rents in the $3 plus category, and they really want to do bigger units. I think a lot of the people in the neighborhood liked it. That typically appeals to an older population. They think that's the building they want to do. A by-right plan has a lot of smaller units that has mostly one bedroom. I think that your colleague brought up that 80-20 number. That's fairly typical. You're renting to a different demographic. And this neighborhood is it's not uptown. This is very much Oak Lawn, and it's older. So
by right actually dictates smaller units?
The by right unit is okay. Probably 700 average, and we're close to 1,000 on average.
So the primary thing is the unit size.
That's right. That's the biggest difference, and the fact that they're different renters. And
I know. Yeah. But I mean, what is the difference? Okay. And then I guess the other question I have is, I can preface this, when I look at zoning cases, I kind of look at the neighborhood and the owner are kind of in some level equilibrium. And then when the owner asks for something, it kind of takes it out of equilibrium. What is the neighborhood getting back for allowing this zoning? What mitigates?
Well, okay, because I think that's what my dad and Brenda were saying is that's what the Oak Lawn Committee does every time is weigh. What are you asking for? In this case, we're asking for more floor area. What are you giving us? We're giving them pedestrian improvements, benches, trash receptacles, wider sidewalks. Mm-hmm. A guarantee of larger units, fewer units, less height, all the underground parking, the fact that if you're walking on the street, we have a three-story townhome. Of course, there's a tower above it, but the part you'll see, we match the three-story across the street. We got bike parking. I mean, there's a list of probably 16 or 18 things that we did.
So why doesn't the neighborhood see value in any of that?
Well, I think, we're at, 100 and something in favor and 60 against. I mean, there's more. I mean, if we did, and we've had this discussion, at one time we went back to the Oak Lawn Committee with the mid-rise, and it was the opposite. We had more people. We had some of these folks were supporting that one, but the people who wanted the taller, this building that's before you, the most expensive, nicest one, then they were opposed. This is a hard one where we got probably, and I will say it is an unusual amount of participation. That's probably good, but it's probably 10% not involved, maybe 60 or 70% in favor and the others are opposed. And, we've tried to bridge that gap going from 300 to 262.
Okay.
But that's where we are.
Okay. And then to kind of piggyback on Mr. Atkins' question. So there's no deed restriction or anything like that to require a certain number of units at 80% of AMI or any affordability component at all in this?
Not in this proposal. We had that in earlier, and it fell out because we addressed other issues like parking.
I'm just concerned that we're not providing low-income housing when we're trying to push inclusionary zoning across the city, but in this particular neighborhood, we're not. So I don't know why we're picking and choosing where we're going to push it in other people's districts, but in other districts, maybe not so much. Did y'all not come forward with it with a low-income housing component to this?
That's not been something that neighbors have shared with us as important to them as it is. We hear you that that's important to this group, clearly.
Well, I'm not important to me, but, I mean, that's important to some people.
Yeah,
I don't like it. I mean, that I got it pushed into my district.
We'll go back and add it to the list.
No, I mean, obviously in all my zoning cases.
Yeah, the current zoning just doesn't require it, and it's new. Maybe the
I mean, in my midtown, we have 20% inclusionary zoning requirement. I mean, a low-income housing requirement.
We've been being pushed the whole time to have more and fewer units, but larger with higher rents. Mm-hmm. So those don't. That's harder to fix with the affordable component.
It just seems like we have a major affordability crisis in the city, and the more and more restrictive we get on zoning, the less units are available to be affordable. So if you were to build the full 470 units, there would probably be a lot more affordable units in there. There wouldn't be these high-end expensive units. There would be more affordable units. You'd have maybe a mixed-income community as opposed to just a high-end residential community.
It'd still be this just a neighborhood. There's not – I mean, it's – it'd still be $2 rents. It'd be
so why not just
$1,600 or something?
I'm just baffled at why you just don't build it according to the by right. I just – anyway. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And, I came prepared to vote on this today. I'm going to follow my colleague and his request. However, I think it's good, and from hearing this about as related to affordable units, it's good that we'll be discussing it to both sides. I would ask that you all continue to work it through with the entire neighborhood again. And when it does come back, I want to have Dallas that the affordable units a part of it before I take a vote on it. Okay?
Yes, sir.
I think it's something that should not be taken out for any reason, nowhere in the city of Dallas. It should be encouraged that it takes place, whether or not it's allowed or not allowed in that particular zoning, okay? So that's where I am. But I appreciate the neighbors coming down on this side, and I appreciate the owners and the Toll Brothers and you guys battling it out and bringing it forth. We will end up with something that's going to be good, but it sounds as though it's going to have some more discussion. So with that being said, I'll wait on the discussion and come back. But when it come back, let's make it right and just let it come back just one more time. When is it coming back? When was it? Can we get Mr. Kingston, is there a mayor? Is there
please, Mr. Kingston, date?
A time frame on this?
I think he said 1 month, right?
It said October 25th.
October 25th, okay. Thanks.
So October 25th, we'll look to celebrate and have good news.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Mr. Cawthorn, so you entertained, I mean, this discussion about what's required, not required. So, obviously more units would be they'd be smaller, less expensive, not really affordable, but more affordable than these bigger units are going to be, the units themselves. Square footage might be the same, but they're going to be very expensive units. Is that correct, when you go down to 260?
Well, yeah, when we went down to 260, we ended up, I think that our average unit size at one time was 950 or 960, and now we're at 1,000. So, when every time you reduce the units.
Did the square footage of the building change?
It did not. In the last month, we went down 10 units, but the building stayed the same. The units got larger.
The units got larger, so the units are more expensive then, because the square footage is the same, and you're renting the same per square foot.
Generally, I mean, sometimes you can't lease it.
Right. So, and we don't, and is it because you said it was discussed? It's not discussed because we don't have a affordable housing policy in the city of Dallas. Is that right? Do we? Right. Are you aware of one that you would have to comply with?
No. If we pulled a building permit, like Mr. Kossum said, we could do 400 and some odd
at whatever or, at whatever market,
whatever
right?
We could
unless
run
you're
for.
In a TIF, in that there's
and
a TIF,
not.
Right? So there's no, we don't have that in the city.
You just get a building permit, right?
Right. So. There's been a lot of talk, but we've never passed one in the city. And
I see this.
Like, it's hard to pick and choose. Like, I'm going to make somebody do it, somebody not, in
right.
one area of town.
I see this as, in this instance, being just another way in that scale of what you're giving or mitigating, to use Councilmember Kleinman's word. This would be another thing like the underground parking. This would just add to the
right.
list of how we're mitigating the extra floor area.
Right. And the concerns of the neighbors, they want less impact in their streets, so that's less traffic, so that's... Then fewer units, underground parking,
right.
So you don't have the street parking problems, and all that causes that increases your cost of your product, right?
Yeah, I mean that, you know, we.
And so that means, yeah, it's harder to do affordability when we put those demands on you. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, these underground spaces are $35,000 a space. You know, you do that, you know, 1.5 times 262. I mean, you can do the math on it. It's a giant. I mean, that's and the Oklahoma Committee really is adamant about things that projects we did 10 years ago or ones Willie did 30 years ago. Sorry, Dad. You know, you could not get away with that with the Oklahoma Committee
yeah.
anymore. They just there's an expectation that every project now.
Right. And I hear the same. I mean, I say that because I hear the same thing in my district. If things are done, they want on-site, underground parking, and I think it's all of us need to realize we're driving up the prices of these products, and then we are also hearing from our neighbors they want less density. So we're not meeting the demand in Dallas. The supply way exceeds the demand. So when we say no to projects. And we all do it. I mean, we all reduce in our neighborhoods. I mean, I know we're the ones that do that, and then we drive the prices up. So we can't say it, council, out of one side of our mouth, we want affordability and we want to attract the middle class and then drive up the price. I mean, I think we have to figure out what we're doing around this council, and this is kind of an example of something. And we get it. You know, I get projects in my district where everybody wants less density because they're concerned about all the issues that we heard about today, the traffic and the on-site, you know, the off-street parking and all those concerns. So thank you.
Thank you.
These are all challenges that we all have in our neighborhood.
No doubt.
Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
In favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motions. Mr. Kleinman won. Okay. Motion's carried.
We'll now move to agenda item 57. Item 57 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a new sub-district within the West End Special Provision Sign District to allow an attached sign, super graphic, on an historic structure at the southeast corner of North Austin Street and Pacific Avenue, 804 Pacific Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 18 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC's recommendation? Are there any speakers in favor? No. We have one speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
I just wanted to let the council know that my name is Robert Fiedler, 9002 Middleby, Austin, Texas. I'm here representing the applicant, and the assistant pastor from the church is also here. He's representing the applicant. I don't have any comments, but if there are questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you. No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Move approval, Mr. Mayor.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a similar sign to one that you all approved about a year and a half ago for the Hamiltons. These historic advertising signs are becoming a new way of doing historic preservation to provide another income stream for buildings that would otherwise be obsolete. Obviously, in the West End, we're trying to keep that vibrant. That's working. Rents are up about $10 a foot in the last year and a half, and this is important to keep a good neighborhood amenity, a church, in the area so that we have a place where people actually would want to live. These things don't do the same sort of level of visual disruption that the typical super graphic does. You see the ones on the sides of the parking garages on Ross are much more garish. This will be historic advertising that would look actually a whole lot like the West End looked originally when it was new. So appreciate your support on this.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And, you know, I have a lot of heartburn, not with the church. I want the church to know it's not about the church, but it is about super graphics. In 2001, Ms. Grayson, I believe you were on the council at that time, we had a big battle with billboards and on 161 and 121. There were some lights that were shining in this lady's backyard. And it brought around the discussion of billboards and the clutterness of billboards. Let me be transparent. I do indulge into outdoor advertising business, and I have had walls downtown in the Deep Elm area. It was not an ordinance at that time in 2001, but the Texas Beautification organization was here. It was a big to-do about the billboards. We put in billboard ordinances, and billboards were blown down. They'd have to mitigate and do all of the things that it took, and I believe then it was not a lot of love for the clutter of billboards. Even though I'm in the advertising business outdoor, it was not a lot of love for billboards. At that time, we did not have super graphics, but I was in the business of doing wall advertising myself downtown in Deep Elm. Fortunately, during that discussion and during that time of a very tough debate, the council then voted to the new billboard ordinance in, but it allowed wall advertising. At one point, the wall advertising a few years later came back to the council in the form of super graphics, and the gentleman that owned it at that time, I believe his name was Mike Anderson, who was doing it. He was a lawyer that decided to get into the advertising business and lobbied the council then to make these advertisements on the super graphics a minimum of 10,000 square feet. My argument then was that you're going to put the small businesses out of business because small businesses do not have access to a building that has a 10,000-foot face. But the argument was to at least make the minimum, instead of 10,000 square feet, 2,500 feet. Well, that was not the argument, and that was not the argument that won. What won was the 10,000 square feet minimum was what it was going to be. And only six super graphic walls were going to be allowed. Only six super graphic walls. That was the compromise at that particular point. As you can begin to realize that through the years in 2003, there was a vote of the council. 2005, the super graphics provision was extended up until September 1, 2008, and August 27th of 2008, it was extended to 2013. Remembering the fact that it was only allowed six and not a lot of clutter in downtown, subsequently other councils, it has now went from 12 and from 12 to 22. What kind of disturbs me is when we talk about the, as I reviewed it, they pay us, or we are paid the city, $20 permit fee when they apply for a super graphic wall. But then they pay us annually $200 to the city for that super graphic wall. When we talk about, you know, we want to deal with lowering our tax rate, and we want to put some money into the police, and we want to do some things for the seniors as well, just to name a few. If we continue as a city to give away the city, we'll never find new revenue. Where I'm going with this now is the fact that the super graphics that are out here, we only get $200 a year off of each super graphic, and the super graphic walls that are up, they are making $70,000 a month. $70,000 a month. So it's very important that we understand that if someone is profiting off of the city and they have a super graphic, and let's give it a little flexibility. Some of them may be $50,000 upwards, $70,000, okay? But at the end of the day, if that wall is sitting there and it is generating $70,000 a month and they pay us $200 a year, and there are 12 months in a year times $70,000 per wall, and we only get $200, I think that's the time for us to go back to our financial committees and renegotiate. You're talking about a contract that should be looked at and renegotiated. It should be our super graphics. It should go back to economic development and our financial committees and everywhere else to make sure that we are at least receiving the dollars that are out here being cast away. Now, if you look at 22 walls out here plus up at 26 walls times, let's just use a figure and say $50,000, okay? And now the ownership has changed because the gentleman, the lawyer that first came, as these rules began to change over the years, one owner could not monopolize the walls. Church, this is not for the church. I'm trying to deal with the church. But because we're talking about super graphics, I have to take this opportunity to talk about super graphics, not the historical super graphic for the church. But certainly they, with relationships, go and pay the building of maybe $4,000 or $5,000 a month. And so the building is just something hanging on the side of the building. But there's a profit in there, and it has been happening. Now, what I'm going to be asking the auditor and the other folks to do is to review all of these relationships that they have here, because the gentleman that owned most of the buildings is a part of, I would imagine and assume, is a part of it, because the new rules came in to where one owner couldn't own as many as up to nine. So what do you do? Well, you go get somebody else, put it in their name, and then you're still a part of it in some form or fashion, even as a consultant, okay? Because these very businesses that are here on this paper, they're not the ones that are out there in the middle of this deal. They're not the ones with the relationships. So I guess I'm asking for us to, from this point, you know, we can move this thing forward. But I am asking that we, the city council, bring to the committee and review the super graphic contracts and agreements thoroughly, and let's see how we can turn back around and get some additional dollars, redirect those dollars, I don't care where they go, redirect them to lowering our tax rate, redirect them to the police, redirect them to senior services, but to do something. But I do believe that this is a process that's out of control. I'm going to go back and do some forensic on this process from 2001 and see who did what and when and who changed whose name and who did what and who all of a sudden became partners and who's doing it and where the check is going, because I feel that we've been taken advantage of, and I want to speak out. And every time I see something about super graphics, it has nothing to do with Mr. Kingston. It has all to do with super graphics is the reason that I'm talking about this. So I'm going to participate with moving this forward, but Mayor and City Manager, I'm asking you all and committee chairs, I want to see a discussion as it relates to super graphic walls and the contract agreements that we're currently dealing with the City of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. I had a question for staff on the background information. Says the Special Signed District Advisory Committee met on May 12th to review the application. The SSDAC recommended denial. Tell me about who is that Special Signed District? Is that specific to the West End, or is it the citywide one? And who's on it, and why did they deny it?
Yes, sir. David Costin, Sustainable Development Construction. The SDAC is a committee that's appointed by the City Plan Commission. It's a standing committee of the City Plan Commission to make recommendations specifically on special sign districts. Most of them are captured under the overall Sign District Advisory Committee, which is SSDAC. I think downtown and maybe one other has a separate committee, but West End is covered by the general SSDAC.
And the and so they recommended to the Planning Commission denial, and then the Planning Commissioner on a commission on a split vote recommend approval.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And because I was having a conversation with my Planning Commissioner who recommended, who voted against this and expressed a lot of concern about in a historic district allowing super graphics to exist, and that was the reason that she told me she voted against it. And I agree with that concern. I mean, it's I generally don't have much objection to super graphics, but if we're having these historic districts and we want them to look historic, putting these giant signs in there just doesn't seem to be a good application. And I imagine that's why originally when the West End SPSD was originally created, no super graphics were allowed. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
David, you can stay there. Maybe go back maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago when we discussed super graphic. There was a limit, right? Do you know?
Yes, sir.
What was the limit?
When the ordinance was originally approved back in 2001, the limit was 6.
Okay, then it changed
then
again.
Around 2008, I think it elevated to 12. Then a few years back, it elevated to 20 to a maximum of 22. With some allowance for 4 additional ones on government buildings, which I'm not aware that anybody's ever done any of those. So,
do they file for a building permit?
Yes, sir. Really, the process is not a lot different than a business coming in applying for a sign on their building. I mean, it's on private property, and the permit's generally based on what it takes to review it. And that's, you know, how state law dictates how we have to set our building permits.
Okay. If we look at state law and we look at policies, I'm just doing the math. I'm going to carry weight. If you had 22 super graphic, just average $50,000 per graphic, that's about $13 million a year. That's a whole lot of money, $13 million a year, and they paying the city dollars at roughly $4,000 a year in fees. I know when you do a building permit that it's based on the cost, you know, the price of the project. Is there anything that stops us from raising the fees based on the
I think we need, you know, if we establish the reasonable justification. I will add, when we adopted the super graphic ordinance, we did set a fee of 10 cents per square foot. So it's not a simple sign fee. So for instance, 20,000 square foot super graphic might be a $2,000 application 3 times a year for those face changes. 2,500 square foot, of course, would only be $750.
But you did say we did set a fee originally. Did it went away?
No, it's still there. It's still in effect.
So 10 cents of a square foot?
10 cents a square foot for each face change. Right now, the face change, originally it was 3 months. I think now we're up to 4 months. Every 4 months, the face has to change.
I guess the question, you know, I'm trying to look at Ms. Carraway and looking at, you know, how do we justify that we did have a limit, you know, on super graphic on the building. And we said we didn't want to have so many super graphics on the building, and one owner could not have X amount of super graphics. So, in a sense, to us, you know, we here are trying to fix potholes and do all the things that we're trying to way to make money to put back to the taxpayers. But I think that we should at least find a way that if they're making $50,000, $70,000 a month, and costs, you know, and it costs less than $200 a year. I mean, that's a good deal. And every year we come back, we keep increasing, and we're not making the money, but they're making money. And on the side of the building, I think it's something that we need to look into. I guess.
You know, again, the fee was originally set.
I know, but we change fees all the time.
You're right. And I'm just,
but it's just like the water bill. We keep changing the fees on the water bill.
No issue with reassessing that fee. No,
okay.
Sir.
When last time we reassessed the value? When last time we did that on the super graphic?
Yes, sir.
When did we change the fees the last time?
Oh, I believe it's been there since the adoption of the ordinance.
So we hadn't changed it?
No, sir. Not, it's not been changed. In the
so it hadn't been changed in 2001?
That's my recollection.
I mean, why have not been reviewed since 2001? No one asked the question?
Again, it's not come up as part of our.
Well, it's coming up now, so I want to ask that we should go back and look at it and bring it to my committee, bring it to Jennifer Gates' committee. I mean, one or two. I want to look at it. If you don't want to, Jennifer, I will look at it because I think it's a serious issue. We hadn't reviewed it since 2001. That's 16 years ago. Right, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. David, are you saying that every time someone changes the sign, they have to pay more fees to the city?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Okay, video boards. When we passed the ordinance allowing video boards downtown, how many were allowed to begin with?
I think it was 8 or 12.
12. How many do we have now?
I think it's probably 15, maybe a little more. I'll get back with you on the exact number.
I think what's clear is that we keep creeping upwards with whatever kind of sign it is, whether it's super graphics or video boards. We've pretty much decimated the billboard ordinance by making all kinds of allowances since it was passed in 2001. What is the fee for video boards?
I will need to report that back to you. I will say also with most video boards, there's also a license fee attached to that. That's an annual assessment since it is a sign.
Is that $1,000?
It's based on the value, I believe. I'll get back to you with those numbers.
Well, Mr. Carraway requested that we look at super graphics. Let's look at video boards also. In terms of what they pay and how many of them we're going to keep allowing, because every time it seems that we have a new super graphic, we what, create a new special district? Is it like a single building district?
No, this is part of the West End Special Vision Sign District, so it will be a sub area within that to allow.
It's a sub area. So okay, so every time you have a new sign, you create a new sub area. Does anybody ever say no?
Well, initially, I think there were no's, and the policy seemed to be going a different direction.
I guess when I say anybody, the sign committee said no, but I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, does staff ever say no?
The staff does say no, but I think the council seems to have an interest in utilization of this tool, so we certainly reassess our position based on the policy that council seems to be leaning towards.
So please add video boards to any study that you undertake related to super graphics. I'd like to see video boards added in. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you. Is this applicant a nonprofit or a for-profit organization?
I'd have to defer to the applicant. I'm assuming if there'll be some value be subject to if they're generating revenue from this enterprise, then at least the board will have to be reporting that. So
somehow subject to like business property, business personal property.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether the building's owned by the church or whether they're renting.
Okay.
You can just answer it up there. That's okay. Nonprofit. Thank you.
Is the ownership of the church?
Yes. So it's nonprofit, yet they're going to be, according to Mr. Carraway's estimations, maybe upwards of over $1 million a year off of this sign, and but we're not going to recover any like business property tax or anything like that.
I think if the sign is generating, I'm not a tax attorney, okay, so I should probably just be quiet. But if the sign is generating revenue, then it should be taxable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. Let me just say a couple of things. Is the applicant the one that's doing this sign, or the applicant, the church, is the one that is going to be on the wall by way and through an ad agency?
I believe the church owns the wall.
Come up to the
and
church. Yeah, church owns the wall. Let me
I believe the church owns the wall, and they will probably be dealing with a sign company to provide and market the graphics.
So would it be fair to say that the church will receive a fee monthly from the applicant, of the actual advertiser?
I would anticipate that, but I have no knowledge.
So I want to just clear that to say that the advertiser is still making their $65,000, $70,000 a month, maybe paying the church $5,000 or $10,000 for the rent of the wall. Let's be real clear when we get into that. Plus, Ms. Costum, let me just say, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I want to just say these things. I have here the official ordinance in my hand from 2009, where in addition approved the item subject to these conditions, where we said that it was like 10 cents and maybe $200 and all that. I failed to finish reading, but I have read now. Approve this item subject to these conditions. Adopt a fee schedule of $5,000 per location and a fee of 10 cents per square foot for the initial copy, subsequent to copy changes and passed the ordinance. It was a motion by former council member Linda Coop and unanimously adopted as ordinance 27587. So I don't know where the $5,000 have been going, but here is the ordinance right here in my hand. And so we need to not just check on what we first talked about. Now we need to figure out where the $5,000 per month is.
And that fee
is
collected as part of the location permit. Yes, sir.
Wherever it is, I'm only reading what has been in the archives here. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, in 2008, as we talked about the square footage, was 10,000 square feet minimum. And so I want to know why here, when I'm looking at it now, on Elm Street, the wall is 2,500 square feet. On Main Street, it's 2,538. On Elm Street, it's 4,400. And on Elm Street is 4,100. On Ross Street is 18,000. Ross is 18,000, and so forth and so on. I want to know about that. And we can discuss this in committee, but at the end of the day, things have changed from 2001. If indeed, Ms. Grayson, the minimum was discussed and set at 10,000 square feet minimum, I just want to know how all of these different companies all of a sudden made application under all of these different names, and the originator of it, I don't see his name, Mr. Anderson, anywhere. Is he out of business now? Is Michael Anderson still doing business with Supergraphic Walls downtown, the originator of the Supergraphics?
I do not know, sir. I do not know whether he still owns property where Supergraphics are located. I don't know the answer.
They got many business relationships, and as I said, I'm going to go along with this wall that we're doing. It sounds as though we're going to get this in committee, and that's what I would like to have done. But I want to do and will be doing a forensic investigation as relate to how this process has been manipulated and changed up and down only to benefit, in my personal opinion, friends. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
David, I wanted to ask you, you said something in response to a question that usually the signs are changed after 3 or 4 months. Is that the 3 or 4 month, is that a requirement, or is that just kind of a practice or what?
It's a requirement of the ordinance. I think one of the original intents was to create visual interest on these vacant walls downtown. And to do that, I think there was an interest in seeing the signs change out every so often.
Well, this one gives them 6 months.
Correct. And I'll have to, What I'm prepared to do is put together a matrix with each ordinance change, what it changed, and kind of go through it. It's evolved. I think it was originally 3 months, then went to 4 months. It may be 6 months. I'd have to go
back.
Well,
this one is 6 months. I mean, I don't know if others are, but this one is six months. So I had two questions about that. One being, is this going to set a new floor? And number two, and Antioch Church, I have nothing against you. I don't. I'm just asking these questions.
I think it's just the two in the West End. This will be the second one in the West End.
For six months. So that could set a new floor. Other people will come in, and what happens with that is that we get fewer fees. We get less fee income as they change it less often.
Yes, ma'am.
And so that's something to look at and see, you know, as soon as we give it to one person, the next person comes in and says, that's the new floor, now I want 6 months. So, or I want to change what I had previously to 6 months. So I'd like to look at that portion of it, too.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? One is opposed, Mr. Kleiman.
This concludes your agenda. So we'll move to the open microphone period. We do have one registered afternoon speaker, Lynn McAdoo, not present.
Thank you. Yes, please. Ms. Grayson had an announcement.
Thank you, Mayor. It's not an announcement so much as I wish I had said it in the morning. One of our morning items was to extend the grant with the World Affairs Council. And at the time, I wanted to say that I think they do a wonderful job for us. And I know that Jim Falk and Beth Huddleston were here this morning. I wish I'd said it then. They had a function on Friday night over at the Anatole where they honored Dirk Nowitzki for his humanitarian efforts. It was an incredible evening. It was so well done. And they had 1,000 people there, and that's typical of the kinds of things that the World Affairs Council does. And so I just wanted to give them kudos because I think they're doing a great job for us. And I wish I'd said it in the morning, but at least I've said it. Thank you.
Mr. Caraway, you've talked a lot today.
Just a little bit. Let me invite folks. Well, first let me say this.
What?
The State Fair starts this weekend, and we're going to have a State Fair. And I just personally want folks to know that we're going to have a safe community as well. It's very important that we say that so folks can know our neighborhoods are going to be safe, and we're going to have a fantastic time at the fair. And Scott Griggs, District 1 and District 4, we're having our National Night Out at Keith Park.
Everybody's so having their National Night Out.
I want folks to know 5 o'clock, District 4 and District 1 at Keith Park.
Yeah, but everybody get out to your National Night Out next Tuesday night. They're all over the city. Thank you. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned 2:46 p.m. Thank you.